Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Joseph Gibson is running for the House of Representatives in North Carolina's District 65. We have to start voting for patriots who love this nation, and conservative nation media proudly endorses him. Joseph Gibson is one of those patriots, and it's not too late. We need to start realizing that there is not a different truth for everyone. As the liberals say, there is only one truth. A vote for Joseph Gibson for North Carolina's District 65 will help bring back the integrity Americans have been missing. Paid for by the committee to elect Joseph Gibson to the North Carolina House District 65. See you at the polls, patriots.
Color Only Day here on CNN with our very own Vincent Brown out of Durham, North Carolina. Black by Color Only is one of the most informative shows on CNN, giving us the reasons that the apostles of blackness are leading this nation in the wrong direction, along with the left. And Vincent will come down on the right too when they do not do what is right. Listen to the wisdom of Vincent Brown on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will find out that the media is lying to us too, along with the leftists in our government. Some of the right are too, and in Hollywood also. He will make you use your mind and think a bit before making a rash judgment. That is Black by Color Only, only on CNN at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, where America always wins.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show, Sundays 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine.
CNN is growing again, and we are proud to announce our new show coming up next with host Suzette, and it will be airing on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Suzette is a constitutional scholar and health professional who has hosted shows on VTR since 2009. She currently hosts Welcome to Suzette Live Talk on Spreaker. Tune in for coming up next with Suzette at 7 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays, heard through Conservative Nation Media, where we can depend on the truth always being told and where America always wins.
But what we saw in that Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans who apparently have no option to do.
Show me where it says that protest is supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
They go low, he kicks.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. So even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and called Mexicans rapists and murderers. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. You would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said, if we're in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man. One
giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding. This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
We are back for another episode. One of the things that I wanted to talk about tonight before we even get started is after the second hour and maybe even going into the third hour, I am going to drop out because I have to be up at 4:30 in the morning to take my wife to the airport. So I'm not going to be able to stay up like I normally do. But I see Joseph has his hand up, and I just brought him in. Hello, Joe.
Hello. How you doing?
How are you doing?
All right. You got a trip? You got
hello, hello.
Going, huh?
Yeah, she's going to visit her daughters because her oldest daughter is graduating, and she wants to be there for the graduation. So.
Okay.
Well, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
And don't worry, you know. So now we know that once you drop off later, then all the shenanigans can happen while I take over the reins of the show when we go into overtime.
Oh, good to know. I thought we had shenanigans anyway.
Yeah, we do, but it's more mild while we're live. We get a little more rowdy once we know that we're in overtime.
So how's your the campaign going, Joe?
Well, it's still got the, I guess now the this Jewish organization wants to make sure that if I win that they ban me from the state house, that I'm not allowed to be recognized as a state representative. I don't know how that works. How they can get away with doing that? That this isn't Stalin Russia. You know, this isn't we don't operate under the Communist Manifesto, or the Reichstag. So this is America. We live in a republic, and if people want me in that office, then that's where I need to be. And I will call upon all militia and all lawful agencies across the state to back me up on that. So because we have a republic here, not a communist regime that has some groups running our government.
Yeah, I totally agree. I almost feel like calling up all these people when they call us a democracy to tell them, you better start reading your books because that's not what we are, although they're changing it quickly.
Yeah, it's sad. A democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner. The majority always wins. You can't. That's not what our republic is based upon. Our republic is just like a jury box. If 12 people are sitting there and one person says not guilty, that person is not guilty. That is the rule of law. So we have, you know, everyone has to have a voice. Everyone gets to say, and the minority always wins. So that's the way it works.
Oh my
God.
I always considered democracy kind of like mob rule.
Okay, whatever.
Who's that?
No.
Yeah, it's Mike.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
Can
you hear me? Yeah.
Yep, we can hear
yeah,
you.
Yeah, the second half of that saying, Robert, is or Joe is about this sheep is and the and freedom is or and a republic is a well-armed sheep contesting that decision. So
yeah.
So you're the well-armed sheep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have to restore our republic. That's what I'm running on anyway. So I was expecting something along these lines anyway. So because when I get in there, I want to restore the du jour system that we have, the original state of North Carolina that was abandoned in 1862 by the 39th Congress.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I had looked at when it came to the original when this nation first started, and I wrote it out in the description of the show, that if the government made a bill, they would pay it off before another one would be made, so there was never a debt. Congress was not paid when they were not in session.
Yeah, correct.
They had to work their own farms or their own jobs when they were at home, and when Congress was needed, they paid their own way to Washington, D.C. They got paid only when they were in session, and when they were done, they went home, but they went home on their own dime. And to me, that just means, you know, if it was still done that way, the Chuck Schumers, the Clintons, the Bidens, the Bushes, none of them would be in government now.
Correct. Well, I discovered something last night. I discovered something last night about the 13th Amendment, actually, and it's true. Lawyers cannot run for public office, and the 13th Amendment was changed, actually, throughout in the early 1800s, and it was hidden from the people. So I got that posted. It's very interesting, actually. So, you know, and it's true, and it's facts. It's been researched out, and some people discovered it, but it's been buried. But that does make sense, though, about the lawyers not being able to run for public office or be a part of public office because they swear an oath to the Bar Association, which is a foreign entity. How can you – you can't swear two oaths. You only have one oath.
Yeah. That's what I always kind of thought and wondered about myself. But I didn't know what you just said. So that's an interesting little tidbit that probably most people don't know.
Correct.
Absolutely. I mean, and think about this. You know, you talk about you can't swear two oaths. Well, if you look at a lot of these guys that like Ron Paul and people like that, Rand Paul, he's a doctor. Well, what does he take? He takes the Hippocratic Oath, right? First, do no harm.
But that oath says do no harm. They're swearing to do no harm. You know, so it's kind of like the Boy Scouts, you know what I mean? The Bar Association, though, they're swearing an oath and allegiance to them to practice their laws, you know, and even if they coerce with the Constitution, that is wrong, you know? You can't do that.
Yeah.
But I see your point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We'll see. I mean, you look at a lot of these guys and they're lawyers, you know. A lot of these guys, even in your state houses, you know.
Yeah.
They're all lawyers.
Right. Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, I've gotten more media time than any other candidate in my state. But, you know, so if you look at it, I've gotten more media coverage than any other candidate. So hopefully this backfires on them.
Yep. There's a guy, you're in North Carolina, right?
Correct.
There's a guy that does a show, that does a YouTube thing out of, I believe, North Carolina, that he talks a lot of politics. Yeah, it's a, again, it's a black guy, but he's a conservative guy. I watch him whenever he's on. His name is Jamal, and I'm not sure if he's on tonight or not anyway, but that's neither here nor there.
I think I know who you're talking about. I think I know who you're talking about. Is he on the Casey O'Day show? Is he on FM station too?
And he might be, but most of what he does is late at night.
Okay.
And like most of it is on YouTube. Most of it is on YouTube.
Okay.
Mind of Jamal and Mind of Jamal Live. He does do stuff on Rumble, but that's, you know, it is what it is. I watch him. He's fun to listen to. I mean, that guy is. I mean, and he's not afraid of saying things, and he's not afraid of having a gosh darn Confederate flag behind him on his green screen, you know.
What? Well, this is big. People just don't understand with 2024 is huge. We have a lot of people that are awake. We've got a lot of people running for office, grassroots candidates. This is a huge turning point for our country. If we don't get in there, if we don't make this change, we are finished. I mean, just why bother in 2 or 4 years? Why bother? We're going to be so far gone. They're already getting us ready for war with Iran, you know, so.
And here's the deal. The RNC is not in a good position. It doesn't have a lot of money to it, and it's because it's been run very poorly by Ronald McDaniel. And
yeah.
to the point of, you know, she's to the point of where people are now wanting to get rid of her and put somebody new in there. She's been there for God darn, gotta be 10 years.
These caucuses and these caucuses, like the South Carolina caucus, totally Freedom caucus. Oh, terrible caucus. I mean, the things that they come up with, but it's totally unconstitutional. I think these groups are just—they shouldn't be allowed. You know, I mean, it's just—I don't know. The special interest groups, these lobbyists, and these—I mean, it's the same money finances both parties, Democrat and Republican. You know, so it's just—it's just ridiculous.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's right, and that's the thing. The problem with Ronald McDaniel is she is. One of the problems is that she's Mitt Romney's niece, you know. So she is the establishment as the establishment gets, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, for us to really do something with the Republican Party, we're going to have to get rid of people like Ronald McDaniel, like Mitt Romney, like, you know, well, what's his name from Kentucky? The old fart that looks like he freezes every time we see him. McConnell. You know, all these guys that are there that are the establishment that have been there for decades, you know, career politicians, they need to go. And I'm not just talking about
I just don't get people. I'm reading some social media post on my opponent or whatever, and he's the things he's saying. It's like, oh, you believe he support you? It's like, oh my God! I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's just like lemmings going over a cliff.
Yep, lemmings. Yep.
Wake up!
That's one thing I didn't know. I didn't know that she was Mitt Romney's niece. No wonder she needs to be gotten rid of.
Yep. They tried it several years ago, and they didn't, and she survived it. You know, there were two people that were running against it, and one was Mike Lindell, you know, which I wouldn't mind having him as the leader of an RNC, but again, that'll work itself out, you know, I think.
You can always hope, anyway.
We can only hope. And,
I have personally been a big advocate of ending the party system, period, and taking parties off ballots, because the two-party system serves the parties. The party system, period, is a perversion of what the republic was supposed to be. So whether the RNC ever repairs and gets its shit together or not is really irrelevant, because it'll always be corrupted. It's too easy to corrupt when there's only one of two parties to choose from. You get to always choose your selected opposition. And that goes with the monopoly of the barristers, like you guys were talking earlier. One of the things we didn't talk about with the Bar Association and the barristers and the way they literally taken over the entire system, there is no executive, no judicial, those things don't even exist anymore, because at every aspect, the Bar Association controls it all. They control the legislature, they control the justice system, they control the executive branches, they control them all. So we effectively have a monopolized government of a bunch of private bar members. And this is the thing that needs to be pointed out, that this is the type of level of corruption that we really need to be looking at, and we need to stop being so hyper-focused on the system that they are forcing us to enter into. They are trying to force us to play their game by their rules, because they made the rules for themselves. And those rules were never meant to be, the codes and statutes and everything, especially as it relates to election law, are all designed to make sure that they stay in power. And we the people have to remember that they are the servants. They are not authorities. They are not leaders. They are servants, and we have to insist upon us telling them how we want our elections run, how we want our parties or non-parties, as it were. I don't think party should even be listed on the ballot. It's private. That has nothing to do with it. If you don't know the party of the guy you're voting for, you're screwed. I mean, that's just the way it goes. You're voting for people, not parties. And that would eliminate in and of itself the whole two-party system as it stands, because most people aren't educated enough to go in there and read more than potato on a ballot anyway. These people that are voting, they're not going to remember the names of every Democrat on a list that they're supposed to be voting for. They don't have the mental cognitive ability to do that. So if you remove the party, the whole check all Democrat thing, check all Republican thing, they lose their hold on that. And once they've lost their hold on that, you actually have a chance of putting real people in a seat instead of these career politicians. And then you start going for the term limits.
The problem, now who's this speaking now? Who's this speaking just now?
This is Adam. Hi.
Okay, so Adam, the problem with that is way back when in Louisiana, we didn't vote by parties, we voted by number. So number 1, number 5, number 25, number 36, you know, on the ballot, right? And that's bad too, because you're not voting for the number, you're not voting for the person, you're voting for the number, you know. And to tell you the truth, I mean, I wouldn't want what they have in Britain, where they have how many different parties,
yeah.
You know, the Conservative Party and Tories and this and that and all these different parties, and where you have all these parties and the whoever the prime minister is has to put together a coalition government to even have a chance at being successful, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
I agree.
To that I would say that what do we define a successful government as? Because right now what I would suggest is that this cooperation between Republican and Democrat is way too cooperative. They do too much. Not everything
yeah.
needs to have a law. In fact, most things don't. We don't need a law to affirm our right to anything, because if it's a right, leave it alone. All you need to do is stop making laws against a thing. So, generally speaking, legislatures do way too much. They should be slowed down. They should have to fight it out. They should actually have to come to a working agreement among people to decide that something is worthy enough to make a law for it. I don't see any problem with having parties of infinite levels. I mean, you want if we understood the original nature of the legislature of the United States, we should actually have thousands of representatives in the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to have one for every 30 to, or I think at max it was supposed to be one to every 50,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've got representatives that are representing millions. Do we really think that that's even possible? How do I believe that my representative, who is representative me and 2.8 million other people, it really has my interest in mind? Does he even care what my interest is? Absolutely not. And that's what we've got now, is the misrepresentative government. The only people that they listen to are the ones that give them money.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
We and they write that they get their legislation handed to them by these corporations. They put them forward. They pass them and all of that. And they don't care what you and me and what the rest of us think. They've got university research that proves that outright. What the people think is popular or what they want has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on the chances of a bill passing or not. So the idea that too many parties, I don't think that's not even possible. We want them to stop. We want them to have to actually find something that's important to deal with, to actually have to work with each other. And when they finally all have a pressing issue that is worthy enough of actually passing a law about, maybe by the time
mm-hmm.
you've got enough of those people from different parties together to agree on that, then yeah, maybe we should pass a law. Otherwise, legislatures just need to leave things alone, and
mm-hmm.
I do agree with you.
You know, what was it, 435 guys in the House or whatever it was, a couple hundred in the House, 100 in the Senate, couple hundred in the House, or whatever it is. I think there should be more House members. You know, sorry. Just the way I think.
Yeah.
You know?
We need to divvy that down so they're a whole lot harder to corrupt, for one.
Yeah.
So if you had
mm-hmm.
if you've only got 400-something-odd House members to corrupt, if you had, you know, 5,000 of them, that would be a whole lot harder to do. But then
yeah.
these people would also be more local. They would be more in touch with the communities that they come from, because
mm-hmm.
instead of representing 2.something-odd, 3 million, 4 million people, you're only representing 50,000 from your local area.
And
it also makes gerrymandering less of a thing, right? Because they
yeah,
talk about gerrymandering a lot lately.
Well, they do that
in
New Mexico here all the time.
Right.
By the way, is Pianchi on the line here?
It looks like he is.
Hi, Pianchi.
You know, I'm getting sick and tired of people messing with Joe Gibson.
Me too.
I'm about 1 or 2 degrees from taking some action on that.
Good.
So, Joe, I don't know what to tell you, but I'm getting sick and tired every time I look around somebody's messing with you. But no, that's why I come a congressperson need to be paid by the state that they was elected in.
Yep.
Not going to Washington, D.C. and getting caught up in that cesspool, and you don't know what the heck, where it's coming from, the money that they collect and what they're doing to. No, let the state pay them whatever they think, whatever the salary is set, and deposit it in their bank account within the state that they represent. That way you got some transparency.
Yep. And keep them in the state.
Stop contributing to that gerrymandering. When you indicate on your registration application your skin color, that just gives them data that they can use to create these segregated and unconstitutional racist school districts, voting districts.
For them to be taking that metric is unconstitutional, period. You are absolutely correct.
Absolutely
they should
right.
never be even asking that question.
And when they create an all-black voting district, a majority, then what comes next? The school district gets that way. Then what comes next? Here comes some, the NAACP, for instance, saying that, well, we need to integrate this school district. Well, how are you going to integrate the school district? Well, we got to bus white kids into the district from surrounding areas. You see how one problem leads to the other?
Yeah.
Yep.
It does.
Yep. And to your point, Pianchi, look at what just happened in Louisiana. Now, granted, it might not be over, but they got this whole goddamn diagonal district that they just came up with, for the House of Representatives that goes from Shreveport to Baton Rouge, and it's like a fucking diagonal district, that all the way from North Louisiana to South Louisiana, right? And it's like, okay, when everybody knows that North Louisiana, there's a difference between North Louisiana and South Louisiana, culturally and everything else, there's a difference, And they're going to try and shoehorn thousands of people in that district into that district because they want another African American district.
Yeah,
don't even like crawfish up in Shreveport and up in the northern part of Louisiana.
Nope, they don't.
That's pretty much what they did here in New Mexico when we had Yvette Harrell as the congresswoman from the 2nd District. The 2nd District was the south part of the state, and the south part of the state is all conservative. There's hardly any Democrats down there. It's all conservative. And what they did was they decided, well, we're going to change that 2nd District, and they went all the way up the side of the state to the south side of Albuquerque. Well, every bit they added in was Democrat, and she lost the race.
They didn't touch my district, so thank God.
Well, that's the thing. This district that they came up with is going to possibly, if the courts don't take it up, it's possibly going to force Garrett Graves, who's a Republican, I don't care too much for him, but he's a Republican, that it's going to force him to go into another district, because he's a Republican and this is going to be a Democrat district. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, you know, here's the thing. States don't have to follow the court's rules on that because you are creating a segregated district. For one thing,
mm-hmm.
I don't understand why don't they tell the states, I mean the courts, to go pound sand. We're not going to create no segregated district. That's ridiculous.
Yep. That's right, and that's the thing. I mean, they've tried. I mean, we've seen Florida do that. We've seen Alabama do that, you know, where they said, oh, according to the Voting Rights Act, you got to have another majority-minority district, right? Well,
yeah.
Both of those two states told the courts to pound sand, and they're
it's
better
up to the
off
representatives to stand up. It's up to the representatives to stand up,
yeah.
And they're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens next? We're going to have a majority same-sex couple district?
Yeah, I know, right?
A majority Asian district? What's coming next?
This is the design, Pianke, the design to destroy our rule of law and the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
make it a joke.
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal.
I mean,
if we want to create districts where we have the correct number of representatives, one for every 50,000, you know what? Let's make an all-gay district. They can do that. Go ahead. They can all live together in one space. That solves multiple problems. They get their representative, but they also get their representative of their space, and they get to do that within their own area. And that would solve that problem, where instead of this gerrymandering stuff that we're talking about, where they're going to take and they're going to take the red light district and they're going to loop it around your neighborhood so they can drown your vote out and whatnot. That's the kind of garbage they're doing right now. So, yeah, give them their own district. Give them their own district. Give us our own district. Give everybody their own districts. That's exactly what we want to happen.
And
at
then,
that point, the actual majority ends up ruling.
It'll be too
and
hard
then
to
they
do
profile it. Now, plus, they profile it. What they're saying is that all blacks are Democrats. That's what they're saying. All blacks are Democrats, and plus, all blacks vote for black faces. Well, to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
that may be true, but they do it de facto. They should do it on their own will. You shouldn't draw a line down the middle of the street, and as you go down the street, you cut over to one house, then the next house, and the next house, and try to capture all the black families to be in this grouping. That's a bunch of bull crap, fellas.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I can tell you what, you know, I'm going to start working the phones tomorrow and calling these people, you know, instead of just going out there trying to talk to people. It's hard to get out there and talk to people. Cause you can, and even when you have a meeting like that we did with the Convention of States, there was only 25 people there. You know, I think if I just call people during the day and get the feel of what people are wanting and what's bothering them in my district at least, you know, I can go from there and see what the feel is. I mean, we did it a couple of weeks ago where we called 250 people. Oh, God, it took forever. But, you know, it paid off in the end. Found out I was pretty close. I was only 6 points behind my opponent. So, you know, and that was right when this crap was coming out about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, all this, I'll say this again. All this stuff, and get this, Pianke. MSNBC, and you can go find the clip or something, but MSNBC sent somebody into a black barbershop, right, and asked them who they're going to vote for. And guess what the answer was?
Trump.
Trump. That's right. Because they said basically what these people in this barbershop said, things were better under Trump. Economy was better. Jobs were there. Everything was better under Trump. And so they're going to vote for Trump, you know? And I think that's what's scaring these people, you know? I'm thinking, you know.
They still got a base out there, though. They still got a base out there of knuckleheads, of bobbleheads that just don't care what facts you bring them, no matter what you tell them, no matter what you show them, they just will not listen, you know?
Like a certain person that was on the show last week, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, but again, with these voting districts, which is the Voting Rights Act is I think that Voting Rights Act has served its purpose, and it's kind of, it's kind of passe or whatever. We don't need it anymore, and that's all these redistricting things that we're talking about are stemming from that Voting Rights Act.
Yep.
More laws, more nonsense. You know, we don't need more laws. This is what happens.
Did you know that Voting Rights Act also included the state of Hawaii? I don't know no blacks live in Hawaii. I really don't. And see, really, to some extent, it was voluntary. You know, this thing about making states participate in these discriminatory and segregated actions is crazy. Why would you do something illegal to try to get revenge on something that was done back in the day that was illegal?
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, me neither.
Yep. By the way, I think we have Cinnamon's in the chat room.
Yep,
there's only
sure
so
is.
Much we can do. You know, there's only so much government can do. Also, it's not the government's job to be taking care of everything our needs anyway. We, the people, have got to stand up and live and self-govern ourselves.
Yeah, I've got a 907 in the queue with his hands raised up, and I can't for some reason. I pushed to get him in, but it hasn't let him in yet, so there they are.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you're in.
There he is. Ho, ho,
okay.
Ho, Boyd.
What's happening?
Nothing much.
Hey, Bob, you let me in just now, too. I got a question for you.
Okay.
Is it possible for me to do a few test shows, like one, maybe two or three in a day without upsetting your network?
Absolutely.
I can. Okay, because I fucked up Royal today. And I want to make sure the next time I get on the air that I don't have to, look around for what I have to do in terms of controls and stuff like that. Because years ago, when I was a host for a very short time, when you called into the host line, you got automatically connected to the studio, but not today. That didn't happen. So I created a lot of dead air. So I want to do a few test shows, get myself familiar with the icons and the controls. So it won't fuck you up if I do two or three test shows for like 10 minutes apiece?
No.
Okay, thanks.
So long as it doesn't conflict with anything else that's scheduled. But are you trying to say you've become too dependent on a woman co-host? So you need to get better practice at taking control?
sounds like a relationship problem to me.
Yeah. You notice I haven't said anything. Dead air again.
Shit, I'm used to the woman doing this for me. Oh, my God.
I know. And I just sent you a text not to pat yourself on the back either. Did you read that? I just sent it to you about a minute ago. I knew you were going to do that. I know.
No,
it.
I haven't
I
seen
just,
it yet.
You haven't seen it yet? Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah,
I'll go
I was
take a look.
Yeah, I I address of everything you just talked about now. Yeah, I knew you were going to pat yourself in the back for my fucking up because you weren't there. And my lack of familiarity with the kind of studio that they have set up, probably for the last, I don't know, I guess maybe 6 or 7 years have had this kind of setup, but I haven't co-hosted or hosted, well, haven't hosted in about 10 or 11 years, and it was a different setup then. So I created some dead air. Then I went looking for clips, created more dead air. So I want to make sure that I don't do that again. So
well,
thanks, Bob.
You know, Joe, I was listening to the show that you just did, and I will have to compliment you on the fact that you beat yourself up pretty good.
Yeah, well, when I recognize that I do something wrong, I like to try to not hide it from myself anyway, so that I can at least correct my mistakes in the future. But boy, since you were there, it was a shit show, wasn't it?
Well, I got in on the last 20 minutes or so of it, and yeah, you were looking for clips, and you were having a tough time getting clips and stuff
yeah.
like that. But you know, here's the other thing, okay? A lot of people have that same problem.
Yep.
On all the different shows, trying to get clips up and running and stuff like that, and you know
that never happens.
Guys
to
like
me. Not ever.
Guys,
oh, of course not.
Guys.
Yeah, that never happens to the woman, as you notice her piping in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, but you know, like Rick, he likes to do YouTube video clips and stuff like that, and you know, he's always fighting with the friggin' commercials and all of that stuff, and you know, so.
Yeah, well, thanks, but still, you know, there were a couple of reasons: one good, the other bad, for the shit show, and I don't want to do another one. I'm just not familiar with the studio.
Joe, if you do that. And it works, then it'll teach me that I can actually do my daily updates on here, too, instead of putting them on Rumble.
Well, the problem is, when you're having problems with the promo, I'm presuming it's because you're having problems uploading it into the studio for BTR to play. I wasn't having that particular problem. I had downloaded clips into my browser, and my browser had them lined up in a row as opposed to having a list where I could just go to, you know, in a second or two. And mm-hmm. I had to keep on clicking the icons on the row to find the show, the clips that I wanted.
No clue what you're talking about. What are you talking about?
You know? Well, why?
Because I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about? When did this happen?
I called into my show. But I didn't have a clue as to what to do because when I called in, it didn't land me into the studio as I expected. That was a setup from years ago. When you called in using the host line, you got into the studio. Then you could open a chat and take a look at the switchboard. When you call in today, as you know, Joe, when you call into your show, you're still on your phone, but you have to connect to your show. By logging
Correct.
In, right? Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So are we up to speed now?
So what happened? You couldn't – why were you unable to call into your own show?
No, I called into the show, but I expected to be in the studio. Since I wasn't in the studio, and Laurianne
okay,
was not the co-host.
Okay, why weren't you in the studio, Joe? Why didn't you go into the studio? What happened?
I did go in later, okay? But years
what
ago,
what happened the first time? You know, why
when,
didn't direct? Why
wait,
didn't
let me, okay, when you call into your show, do you automatically connect to the studio?
Yes.
Well, that didn't happen to me.
Well, you have a host call-in number and a host PIN number, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, it should have. You could have went right to the studio.
I know it should have. I thought it should have. That's why I'm saying. I didn't
how
connect.
How do you get to the studio over the phone, though, is the thing. Because the studio is online. It's the website where you can see, you know, the callers and if they're raising their hands. You don't see that when you call in to the host line on your phone. You have to be on your phone, and then you have to go to your web browser and log in to Blog Talk Radio website and go to the studio from there in order to see everything. Right?
Then, Joe, how do you – well, for me, that's what I had to do today. Joe, how do you – you just said if you call into your show, you get automatically connected to the studio. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes. Well, what she just said makes sense. What I'll do is I go to blogtalkradio.com, I sign in, and then I call in the host number, and then it automatically connects me.
Oh, okay. I called in, right? I didn't log in first. I called in. But even if you log in first, then you call in, then you see the studio. When you call
correct.
In and you don't log in, you don't see shit.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, that's
okay.
Weird.
No,
yeah,
well.
That's what I do, too. I always go online first, you know, and pull up the studio and everything. And then when I either direct connect in or call into the host line, that I'm always calling into the host line after I'm already logged in and at the studio page on BTR. So I don't, you know, do it in reverse order. So that's interesting.
Yeah,
so if you aren't already logged in, you call into the host line, then you try to log in, then it's that sounds to me like a bug. That's a BTR bug.
Yeah, but that didn't happen. Okay, here's what happened. I did not log in. I called in with my years ago when you would call into the show without logging in, it would automatically put you into the studio, if my memory is correct.
You've got more problems. You know, it just doesn't make sense, none of it. You're always getting disconnected, kicked off. You know, you don't remember when the show is. What's going on with you?
I'm not answering.
You know, that's one of the things that I was going to bring up, too, is Suzette's show on Wednesday didn't air because I found out that she's in the hospital, and I'm not sure how many of you guys know, but Lorianne knew this.
Huh.
Is she okay?
No. Yeah.
What did I do?
I said, you know about Suzette.
Oh, yeah. So Suzette, not sure when she will be able to start her show because from talking with Robert, Brina Boye, she is having some health issues right now, and last I heard she was in the hospital being treated and stuff. So hopefully, cross my fingers, she gets better soon and can get back into the fold. I'm hoping Brina Boye might show up tonight. Who knows? We might see him show up tonight. I'm going to keep an eye out in the chat to see if we can get any updates from Brina Boye, Robert.
They would know what's wrong with her?
And she has a couple of different things going on with her. So she's just not in very good shape right now. She has a antibiotic resistant staph infection in UTI.
Oh God. Oh my God. That's not good.
Yeah, this isn't a sudden thing. Yeah, this is an ongoing thing. So she must have had a flare up or something like that. To a continuous condition that she has.
Yeah, but antibiotics, though, they can't, they're not accepting antibiotics, oh boy. You know, the body's rejecting it, oh boy. It's not good.
Yep. Well, I let Sarge in, so he's in there now.
Hi, Sarge.
Hey, how you doing, Sarge?
Hello?
Sarge, what's up with that retard Chewbacca? What's up with that retard Chewbacca calling everybody chewing you out?
Wait a minute. Wait, now say that again.
He calls up my show the other night, okay? And then he calls in and he starts spewing out nonsense. And he says, and you're all finished, Sarge. You've been voted out. The committee said they don't want to do a debate with you. It's never going to happen. You're no longer welcomed over there. But he hung up on me.
Look, I went on his show today, and this is what he told me. He told me that he said that someone, I don't know who, look, I'm only repeating what he told me. He told me that someone said that someone had desired a debate between me and him, and
yes,
that he didn't want it to be done unless he and I got paid for it. Now, that's what he other than what he told me, I don't know anything else.
Oh, my God. Well, just
maybe
just
you,
to let
Sarge.
You know,
Sarge, maybe you, but Chewbacca. That dumb,
hey,
that dumb idiot.
Joe, what do you mean you don't?
I'm just saying that's what he said. Now, you know, I look. He said that several times, and I didn't make any other comment about it.
He, he wasn't lying.
Right.
But Joe knows what happened. I was the one that suggested that you and he have a debate with me as the moderator, so that we can keep things on track. Now he wants to get paid for it? Oh, man, that is real.
Well, that's what he said. He said he was going to do it. And I told him, I said, well, look, man, I don't know anything about this. I'll tell you what. I'll let you be my agent in a negotiation, okay? And that left
I'll give a Twinkie.
Beyond that, I don't know anything else about it. Nothing.
Oh, that is rich. That's just a way of his saying, no, I'm not going to get on the air and spew my philosophy because my philosophy is full of holes. That's what he's saying.
That's what I do.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you a very interesting concept you told me today. Now, he was telling me about the line about the white rapists who raped their slave chattel.
Oh, yeah.
Inserted their bloodlines into African bloodlines that had been kidnapped from Africa. And I said, okay. I said, well, you say. And he also mentioned Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali had said that hummingbirds should stay with hummingbirds and bluebirds stay with bluebirds. And you remember that relatively famous quote that he made? And I said, okay, well, I hear you saying that. But Muhammad Ali, rather late in his life, was rather surprised to learn of his Irish great-grandfather who did not rape the woman he married and who is his direct first maternal grandfather. I said, now, had Mr. O'Grady from County Cork, Ireland, heeded his Muhammad's own admonition, then Muhammad Ali would not exist. And you know what his response to that was? He said, well, that's not necessarily true. Don't you know about hummingbird? I said, wait, are you giving me some kind of hummingbird genetics? What is this? If you cut out anybody in your direct ancestral line, no matter how they got there, I mean anyone going back to the beginning of your genealogical tree, then you do not exist. I hope you understand it. He would not concede that point to me.
He's an idiot, Sarge. He's an idiot. Their arguments and what they say are just complete. And all he does is say the same thing. Dump. The dump. The dump. That's all he says.
That was the main. I said, well, look, I'm going to have to really do some research into this notion of hummingbird genetics because I've never heard it before.
Oh, Warren, don't waste your fucking time.
I know. Don't waste your time.
To your point, Sarge, Angela Davis, the terrorist, from the 1960s,
I know.
When she was told by Henry Louis Gates Jr. that she could trace her roots back to somebody on the Mayflower, she did not like that one bit.
Well, no, actually, she was so shocked by it, she literally did not know what to say. And then she was reluctantly forced to concede that she'd have to look at these matters in a different light. And LeVar Burton, just the other day, had a direct maternal grandfather who was a Confederate. And that came out on Louis Gates' program. They were able to definitively trace, Louis Gates was able to definitively trace his Confederate grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather on his mother's side. They had his name. They had everything there. And they lined up all the information. So there was no other conclusion you could make, but along with the DNA results, the mitochondrial DNA and stuff, that he was his twice-removed grandfather. And LeVar Burton, now LeVar Burton was admittedly surprised by this all, but he said he was going to have to reconsider many things in a different light as he attempted to talk to people about the complex relationships of black and white people in the United States. And I thought that was a rather classy response after he got over. I don't know why he was so surprised. It is evident that most people who consider themselves African Americans have some measure of Caucasian ancestry. It's not a surprise. It's not a mystery. You can look at most black people and tell something's not in the wood pile somewhere in the way back.
I was about to say LeVar Burton. I remember from Roots and from one other show. And he was he's fairly dark skinned, but on the other hand, Angela Davis is light skinned, not super light, but she's brown skinned. You would
denial,
think that you would know that.
That was just
LeVar Burton.
You know, you got to understand what it is with these race merchants. You see,
wait,
that was a simple case of denial. She never wanted to confront it. The thought of her having white blood, particularly white blood of the original colonizers and oppressors on the North American continent, probably abhorrent to her. And even though subconsciously she's certainly aware of it, I mean, she has some measure of education. She knows she just didn't want to acknowledge it until she was directly confronted with the ineluctable evidence by Louis Gates.
Well,
these guys in their black kitty cats that come on there wanting to, you know, to talk about, you know, war and everything. He's just an asinine star. It's a waste of time, you know?
LeVar Burton is an actor. He ain't Kiku Tekente, Joe. So I'm talking about his skin color. And another
right,
thing,
and then,
This is how they get you. This is how they get you. They say the Africans that was kidnapped. Well, I've been to Jufari, the village that Kuta Kente came from. They were not kidnapped by whites. They was kidnapped, grabbed up by other African tribe members. That's the way they were. How in the hell, I mean, think about this. You got a schooner, a boat of that period of time. The most it's going to have on it is probably 30 crew members to hoist the sails and do everything else. And then you had to row to the shore. Usually some Africans of the shore that you was going to rowed out and brought you in. So you had to leave members on the boat to tend to things. So how in the heck are you going to have about 15 to 20 boat members, crew members, going to go in and take over a whole damn nation? That shit ain't going to happen.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what, Bill? I really thought, though, when I listened to you know, what Jabaka was saying about Mr. O'Grady, who married a black woman. Black men today don't marry the women they impregnate. Now, at the time, Mr. O'Grady married Muhammad Ali's maternal grandmother. At the time he married her, after slavery, but he was an immigrant from Ireland who came to the United States well after slavery in the 1890s. Now, when he married this woman, as far as I'm concerned, to marry a woman is the ultimate in commitment to her. He married her, and he lived with her for the rest of their lives together. They lived it. They didn't get divorced. Now, how many black men today marry the women they impregnate? Not many. This white man gave the ultimate respect to a woman to stay married to her and raise children with her. I thought that was kind of an insult to him to consider him to be a rapist.
Well, that would be his philosophy, as you're talking, they're racist. But the most astounding marriage I'd ever seen with regards to race was a picture that I had seen of a white slaveholder who actually married one of his female slaves, married her. And I'm saying, wait a minute, is this a mistake? Am I reading this wrong?
No, it happened. It happened often, but it happened. And like I said, to marry a woman is the ultimate in commitment to her. I'm sorry. Look, the act of marriage is a commitment. It's a commitment made both legally and frequently morally with witnesses and everything else.
Sorry,
I mean,
when they live together, you're looking, you know, when they live together and everything, that happens, you know? I mean, come on. It's just a human instinct.
Of course it happens.
It happens today. It happens today.
Yeah.
How many times have we heard of employers having a relationship with their employees? You had Bill Clinton.
Yep.
You got Fannie Willis. It just goes on.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I got a great book that you guys might be interested in. It's called Enemies in Love. It's a story of a German prisoner of war who was a Fallschirmjäger, a paratrooper who got captured in Italy, sent to the United States to work on a farm in the United States, a prisoner of war, and he fell in love with and met this really stunning black woman, commissioned officer nurse, because they didn't want, you know, black nurses tending to white soldiers if they could avoid it, but they didn't mind them tending to German prisoners of war. And he saw this woman. He was so taken with her the first time he saw her. He walked up to her. You know, he was working in a mess hall. And he told her, excuse me, Herr Leutnant, but I intend to marry you. And she just looked at him like he was insane. And the next thing you know, they were conducting a clandestine relationship for which, by the way, she could have been court-martialed. But the authorities never found out about it. After she got decommissioned from the army, she married him. They moved to northern England, and they had a bunch of children, and they stayed married for the rest of their lives together. It's really a great story. It's by a woman named Alexis Clark, and it tells the story of this. By the way, this German was an upper-class German who had, came from a wealthy industrialist family, and he went into the army, and like I said, he went into the Air Force because the paratrooper was a part of the German Air Force. He fought in Italy at Monte Cassino against the Americans. He got captured, and like I said, he got sent there. And his children and everything else, they were raised dual German-speaking and English-speaking and everything. It's really a wonderful story.
That's a dangerous game. That's a dangerous game people play, though. You know, I mean, you're dealing with people's heritage, you know.
And trials they went through and everything else. Both of them were rather exceptional people, and I think it's a great story.
Yeah.
And so, as I recall, when I watched several times the movie about the Red Tails, the Tuskegee Airmen, there was one of them that was shot down that ended up getting with, falling in love with a German or an Austrian woman, and black guy with a white woman, and ended up staying with her, you know? I think.
Yeah,
of course it happens.
Well, again, it happens because human beings are always going to find each other attractive, even across races, and that's just the way things work. It's human nature.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get rid of it. You're not going to be able to change it. And if they get along with each other, it's nobody else's business if they do. Period.
And it goes on. It goes on in all groups, even in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The Akan, or should I say the Ashanti, you
oh, God, it happens over there like crazy.
Oh, yeah,
the numbers
you cannot become a paramount chief if you're not a con. Look at Jerry Rawlings. Jerry Rawlings could be a national president, but he could not be a chief of one of those tribes because he was mixed. He had a Scottish mother and a Ghanaian mother. I mean, that's just the way. Mm-hmm. My wife is Awe. They hate Nigerians, and they hate the Ashanti. That's just human nature.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're big on that stuff over there.
And
wow.
Think about this. You know, you look at – they say that Hispanics and blacks do not get along, but
– Well, that's a true act, believe it or not. That is true. For
that
some
is
reason,
true,
they hate
but, each other. But there are – I've seen mixed race marriages between a Hispanic.
Yeah. It's, like you already said, it happens. Yeah, it happens with everybody. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah. But you know, for some reason, though, like in the prison system, the Puerto Ricans could not stand living near the blacks. They just didn't get along, you know?
Well, that, too, inter-ethnic strife is a very common thing, too. But so is inter-ethnic attraction. And Romeo and Juliet, the Capulets and the Montagues. I mean, hey, Shakespeare wrote about it. That's just the way it is. It's human nature. The conflict and the attraction and the reconciliations, all of it are part of the human struggle and human nature.
When I was president of the gang, Sarge, I got along with all the black leaders and everything, and then all the Puerto Ricans, you know, they had to do what I said, obviously, because I was the president. But, you know, I had peace treaties with everybody because they were going to war with each other, man. They're killing each other over freaking handball games, you know.
I got news for you. I got black gangs in Chicago that did precisely the same thing. They went to war with you and they killed me.
The Puerto Ricans got a saying that marrying a white man is fixing up the race. That's what they say. And Cape Verde, they had some too. So, I mean, that's just people. People are different around the world. That's just the way they are.
I find it fascinating, to tell you the truth. I find all of it fascinating. All the permutations and the ins and outs, I think it's every bit as intriguing as any other aspect of human nature.
Can't tell that to Chewbacca, Sarge. Oh, no.
Remember, hummingbirds, bluebirds should be with bluebirds, and hummingbirds and swallows. And like I said, had Mr. O'Grady heeded that admonition, the world would never have heard of Muhammad Ali, because Muhammad Ali would never have existed.
That's right.
And you know what? You know something else? There is another boxer by the name of Joe Louis who married a white woman and always got flack for it, but he stayed married to her, you know. Married a white woman, yeah.
Regardless, Marciano still would have whooped Muhammad Ali's ass.
Don't go by what the
computer said. I say that's possible. I'm not sure. Muhammad Ali, in addition to everything else he had a great chin. That meant he might have been able to withstand Rocky Marciano's incredible punch. Because there are few heavyweights in history, especially the fact he wasn't the biggest heavyweight, but he had one of the biggest punches.
No, he wasn't.
It was measured. They measured his punch on a ballistic meter at the United States Army base at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and they couldn't believe it. It was over a ton when he hit that thing. That's what they used to weigh the ballistic impact of shells and rounds. And when he hit that thing, it was about with a ton of force. They couldn't believe it. A half a ton of force. They couldn't believe it.
What about George Foreman?
You're right. He had a lot of power, and he did have a jaw out of rock.
He had endurance, man.
And Muhammad Ali said himself, he might have lost to Marciano. I personally don't think that would have happened because Marciano was too slow.
But Marciano had another thing going for him, too. He was one of the best-conditioned heavyweights of all time. He wasn't fast, but when it came to gas in his tank, he almost never
ran. He could last 15 rounds.
Easy. He was superbly conditioned. And here's the thing. Muhammad Ali, even though he was much faster and bigger, but Muhammad Ali could take a punch, too. Nobody knocked him out the whole time he was in. They might have put him on the deck a couple times, but nobody knocked him out. He was incredibly tough.
He
fought Ken Norton. With a broken jaw. He had a broken jaw and stayed in the fight the whole fight.
The whole fight. Oh, yeah, Muhammad Ali could take punishment.
He was tough.
You know what kills me? You know what kills me, Sarge? Is this, right? With Ken Norton and Muhammad Ali, the fight like that, right? But then Jerry Cooney gets in there and knocks Ken Norton down 52 seconds. What the hell, man?
Paper covers rock. Rock crushes scissors. And that's the way it is, man. Styles make fights. That's why
that is such a great fight.
And one fighter's strengths can be overcome, one fighter's weakness can be overcome by another.
You know who was very underrated? Marvin Hagler.
He was underrated. He was one of the greatest middleweights that ever stepped into the ring.
I think he was underappreciated, but he wasn't underrated.
That's what I meant.
Everybody recognized what a great fighter Marvin Hagler was.
God. See what he did to Thomas? See what he did to Hitman Hearns?
Well, Tommy Tommy did not have a good jaw. He was very adept at avoiding punches, and he was very good at not only slipping, but he had one of the best left leads that you could ever find in the business. And his right hand, forget about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Until he fought Sugar Ray Leonard.
Sugar Ray Leonard beat him?
Hell yeah!
I didn't know that.
What?
I thought it was the other way around. Oh man, I didn't know that.
No, Sugar beat him twice.
Wow.
And then when Sugar beat Marvin Hagler, that's what convinced me that Sugar Ray Leonard was really one of the best pound for pounds ever in the history of boxing.
Wait a minute, Sugar Ray Leonard beat Marvin Hagler?
I didn't
know that either. Wow.
Yep.
Wow. I did not know that.
Well, actually, he pointed Marvin Hagler on aggression. I think Hagler won that fight. I mean, I saw that fight. He pointed Hagler because he hit with him more punches, but none of his punches really affected Hagler. Hagler had him against the ropes a couple times. He barely got away without serious damage. When it came to aggression, I mean, Sugar Ray Leonard was on a bicycle the whole fight.
The hope of the thing, Sarge, is always going to be a matter of aggression versus defense. You can go backwards all night, but if you're hitting, if you're punching and you're hitting, and if you're making the guy that has the reputation for being aggressive miss, that could be on your, those points could add up depending on who the referee is, who the judge is.
As soon as Sugar Ray Leonard had that eye problem, though, as soon as he had that eye problem and then he started, he hit age 35, it was all done for him. That's it,
Yeah, that poor guy lost to the other champ.
Look, but I'm going to tell you right now, guys, I just saw a movie called Big George Foreman, and for my money, that's one of the greatest stories in boxing. Now, this guy, after he lost Ali, he went into a depression and a funk. After he fought, I forget the guy's name, Jerry Young, he almost died. His heart started racing real fast. He went blacked out. He said he saw the light, and he passed through a portal, and he came back. And people there could barely detect a pulse. They thought he had died, and that's when he decided to quit boxing and go into the priest.
Preacher.
He became a preacher. And here's the thing. He went to Muhammad Ali and apologized to him. He said, I found Jesus and the Lord, and I've been hating you, and it's not right of me to hate you, and I want to apologize to you for hating me. And Muhammad Ali said, well, that's okay. I appreciate your apology, George. I'm going to take it. But look, let's have a fight. We can make millions of dollars. I'll give you another shot. And George Foreman said, no, I've had a genuine conversion. I don't care about the money anymore. I'm leaving the game. I still love you, Muhammad. By the way, they remained great friends for the rest of his life.
But, George, he came back to the game, though. He came back to the game.
Here's the thing, though. He turned down that money, and he went to preaching and built community centers for his flock in the community he was in the Fifth Ward in Houston. He built nice gyms. He put up youth programs and everything else. And then he had investors who ripped him off and took his money. So what he did was, reluctantly, after 10 years away from the game and weighing 320 pounds, he decided to come back and become heavyweight champion. And goddammit, he did it.
I know. He beat Tony.
That's the greatest. As far as I'm concerned, that's one of the greatest stories in the heavyweight game. That makes him one of the greatest heavyweight champs ever. Not only that, he's a great guy with a great personality. And he started
off
life.
That's true.
He started off life as a thug, a strong-armed thug. But he turned himself around.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. You're right about that.
He did armed robberies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's key about it. Yep.
And one of the greatest champions of all time. I just love George Foreman.
Oh yeah, I agree with it. He is. He goes my EDD. I just had him on my freaking. Holmes. Holmes is the most underrated champ that ever was in the heavyweight division. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. He was good. He was good.
He had a great jab. He had the best jabs in boxing, man.
Oh,
he
yeah.
I didn't like him. I just didn't like him. Nobody ever liked him, really. You know, I think that's what it was, I mean, I was rooting for Cooney to beat his ass so bad, and then he won that fight,
But he had a great jab. He really had a lightning jab, and he could could slip a punch superbly, and he could avoid really taking damage. That's what got him.
Tyson whooped his ass. Why, Tyson just ripped him of shreds, man.
Oh, man, Mike Tyson beat him like he owned it.
Yep.
Mike Tyson, 20, 21, 22, 23, you couldn't beat him. You couldn't beat him.
No, Mike, you couldn't beat Tyson. No.
You know, Mike Tyson was a guy Mike Tyson was a guy that knocked Trevor Burbick down three times with one punch. You know?
Yeah, he kept falling down trying to get up.
Yep. But that,
hey, you know, Tyson said was his inspiration to fight. He said it was Jack Dempsey, because Jack Dempsey was small
weight.
That's
odd. That's
he had
weird.
To sit close and to keep moving his head. And he said when he said he was going to adopt Dempsey's style to figure out to get into bigger fighters and do the damages. And that's exactly what he did. You look at
talking about Marciano,
like Jack Dempsey.
No, Jack Dempsey.
Ooh. But are you talking about Marciano adopting the style?
No. That was Mike Tyson adopted Jack. Acknowledged the fact that he got much of his model for the way he fought, not only from Teddy Atlas and what's the custom model who put him on that style, but he said because Mike Tyson was a boxing student. He really knew boxing history.
Oh, yeah.
And he knew the boxing champs, and he studied film. And he looked at the way Jack Dempsey fought, and he realized that Jack Dempsey's style suited him as a smaller heavyweight, particularly a shorter heavyweight, very well. And that's why he fought the way, kind of like the way Jack Dempsey did.
You know what his problem was, Tyson? He didn't know how to control himself around women. That was the problem.
Well, the problem was that he dropped Customato and Teddy Atlas and got hooked up with Don King. That's where he went wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he found out too late.
Huh?
Yeah.
Let's come back.
I would have loved to have seen a fight between Joe Frazier and Rocky Marciano. Styles are the same.
Yeah, they're the same, man. They fight the same way. I think Marciano would have won that one, though. Because I think I don't know.
Could be, but I don't know. I mean, both of them.
Rocky Marciano, it is said that Rocky Marciano, when Stallone was riding Rocky, he based it kind of on Marciano.
Yeah.
You mean Rocky?
I think it was Rocky Chuck Wepner he based it on, actually.
Yeah. It was the English boxer.
Got that one in a million shot at Muhammad Ali. And remember, Muhammad Ali didn't train and wasn't in shape. And Chuck Wepner put him on the deck in the third round and had him in some trouble. Everybody thought, uh-oh. I mean, Muhammad Ali was shocked.
He didn't prepare. It was like when Tyson got knocked down by Buster Douglas. He wasn't prepared.
That was kind of what happened to Ali, even though Henry Cooper was an infinitely better fighter than Chuck Wepner. But Henry Cooper was nobody to fool around with. He had a great punch.
Well, he was the champ of England. He was the English heavyweight champ.
Yeah, the English heavyweight. He had a great right hand, and Ali was fooling around with him. And Henry Cooper caught him and put him on his deck and damn near knocked him out. Came real close to knocking him out.
Yeah.
It was a good thing it was right at the end of the round when it happened, or he definitely would have knocked him out.
Hey, Mikey, when it comes to a story about Marciano, Marciano was hanging out with Burt Reynolds one time. And Burt Reynolds said, because he was telling the story, and Burt Reynolds said he thought he was just going to turn around and just smack Marciano. But as he was turning, Marciano said, "Don't you even think about it." And Burt Reynolds says, "Well, how do you know? How'd you know I was going to do that?" He says, I always know.
Oh, man, I tell you, they had some great fighters. Ezzard Charles.
He was great, too, yeah.
Ezzard Charles. Who else? Jersey Joe Walcott. Guys in that era, they were some great fighters, man. Cleveland Big Cat Williams, the greatest fighter who never won a championship.
Well, when he fought Muhammad Ali,
the original.
Why?
man, you got to remember, he fought Muhammad Ali after he'd been shot and lost like 3 or 4 feet of his small intestine when he got shot by a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was. I well, mean, he was not that. Physically. He was not what he once was when he fought Sonny Liston. That was one of the great fights of all time. If you ever get a chance to see it on YouTube, him and Liston went at it like tigers in a cage, man. It was an unbelievable fight.
The original.
Sonny Liston was another bad motherfucker too, man.
Because I was about to say if Williams. Because I don't remember the fight between he and Liston, but if Williams could last 3, 4, 5 rounds with Liston coming after him, he had to have a jaw.
It went almost the whole distance. It went almost the whole distance.
Oof.
I mean, Liston finally caught him. But look, man, George Foreman said that Liston was the only man he ever fought in a ring who could push him around at will, and he said nobody ever hit harder. He said Sonny Liston was the strongest boxer he ever fought. Sonny Liston was a real deal.
Actually, guys,
hell yeah.
It all goes on, you know, how old they are at the time they fought. You know what I mean? Because age is a real big factor, you know. When you hit 30 years old, you're starting to go downhill. You're slower, you know. I mean, 35, you're an old man.
About that age, Liston never lost his punch, man. And like Foreman said, when he sparred with him, he said nobody ever hit him harder or could push him around at will. Liston was one strong motherfucker, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
When he could fight with cops.
Raging Bull.
When he got his fights in cops with St.
No,
Louis,
Raging Bull.
He'd pick him up and throw him in dumpsters. He'd literally pick him off the ground and throw him in the dumpsters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jake LaMotta. That's who it was.
Jake LaMotta from Raging Bull, right, with De Niro portraying him, yeah.
Now, Jake LaMotta, man, was a lunatic. But it, man,
now, you're talking about a guy with a chin. Holy
oh,
shit.
Oh, man, he had him and Sugar Ray Robinson. Goddamn this fight.
Oh, it's like 10 times.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Have you ever seen this fight of Mickey Ward? This guy, Mickey Ward, man, I swear, he had some real duels with this Hispanic fighter. I can't think of what the name was. If you ever get a chance to watch the fights of Mickey Ward had with this Hispanic fighter, I mean, it's nonstop action from beginning to end.
No,
and Jake LaMotta would be kind of like that.
I heard of Mickey Ward.
I never heard of him.
Mickey Ward, man, I tell you, he was one entertaining fighter. If you ever watch him, oh, man. It's nonstop.
Was that
bell to bell.
I'm thinking of somebody else. The Nomas.
Hands of Duran.
Hands of stone.
Yeah.
Yep, hands of stone. Yep.
Roberto Duran, and he did it.
Oh God, yeah. Yep. Boom Mancini beat his ass?
Hell no.
Or Hector Camacho.
Mancini?
No. Macho Camacho. Yep.
No, not Macho Camacho either.
Beat Roberto Duran until, I think, Sugar Ray Leonard. He was the first one to beat Roberto.
And he didn't do it either. Not with that fucking No Mas bullshit. You're not going to tell me that Hands of Stone after the second or third round, just because he got punched a couple of times in the stomach, supposedly because he ate a little bit too soon before the fight, he's going to give up a championship fight. That was bullshit.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if it was a good fight.
But let's face Ray got the L on that one.
He did.
You know
what
was a real good fight? Yeah. Alexis Aguayo and Aaron Pryor. That was one of the best fights I ever seen.
Oh,
my God.
He never stopped. Aaron Pryor never stopped. He was a windmill.
Lord have mercy, was he ever. Did you ever see that George Foreman Ron Lyle fight? Good God.
Yeah.
Five knockdowns in that fight. Foreman got knocked down twice. Ron Lyle went down three times. It was nonstop rock'em, sock'em robot thing, man. They were punching from one bell to the end.
Mm-hmm. All I can say is what happened to boxing, man? What happened to it? It used to be good, man, all the way up to about mid-'80s, you know, maybe even early 90s.
Don King fucking ruined it.
Yep,
Don King ruined it.
I don't know. It got ruined, that's for sure. It was a great sport.
It's all 50s now.
It got ruined, but again, when you're taking a young boxer and putting him in a movie like they did with Tommy Morrison with Rocky V, Tommy Morrison ended up having a pretty good career after that anyway, And he was known for having a hell of a right hand, you know.
Oh, yeah. Power, prosper in his right hand, right hook. But let me tell you one thing about Tommy. Tommy Morrison was probably the greatest unrealized champion of all. He could have been a truly great fighter if he hadn't been fucking around so much, doing that dope,
yep.
messing around with women,
yep.
and training more. He would have been one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, but he squandered
right.
it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
What a shame.
He had everything except a chin. His chin was a little suspect, but he had everything else. He had defense. He had speed. He had power. He had footwork. He had all the things, everything he needed to be a great heavyweight champion, except he didn't have the goddamn discipline to stay consistently disciplined and train hard and quit messing
mm-hmm.
around with the women and the dope.
Yeah. Yep.
But if he had supposed to have done, he would have been one of the greatest heavyweight champs of all time. He had everything he needed.
Mm-hmm. The guy I've seen clips of him knocking people out, and it's like, yeah, that guy, you're right, Sarge, he's one of the most unrealized champions.
I think another guy that right hook
like few heavyweights I've ever seen.
Sarge.
The power in his right hand was sufficient to put down
yeah.
really good fighters with one punch. Like
Sarge,
he did Razor Ruddock. Remember when he was fighting Razor Ruddock? Put him down with one punch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think another
yeah.
guy that falls into that category is, who's that guy from Samoa? He had a huge left hook.
Oh, Tua?
Tua, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was another one. What a powerhouse he was.
Mm-hmm.
He is. I guess he's not.
But powerful. He only had the left hook, and that was it. If he didn't have the left hook, forget it.
You know,
he didn't have great defense. He didn't have great footwork. He would just charge at you, and if he got you, he got you. But outside of that,
I'm
going to tell you another great one who could have been great, but he was insane, and that kept him. He was that Nigerian fighter named Ike Iwobuchi. I don't know if you ever saw him fight, man, but he had everything. He had power. He had footwork. He had speed. He had the reflexes. He had everything. But he was literally insane. They had to put him in a nut house.
Mm-hmm.
But he had everything going for him, man. He could have been another great champ.
Well, another guy, and this is a local guy from Louisiana, but this guy, Clifford Etienne, that showed up a few, in the mid-90s. But, yeah, he ended up getting in trouble with the law and having this serve time in jail, which cut his career off. But he had the heavy hands. He was quick. He was fast. But he had heavy hands, meaning hands of stone type person, Hit you hard. When he hit you, you stayed hit,
I would have liked to have seen Fury versus Lewis in their primes.
Mhm. And then
just recently,
what's his name? Vitaly Klitschko. He just retired, and he went off to be some politician in some foreign country or whatever.
Hey, he's mayor of Kiev.
I think he's
yep.
in from the Ukraine, isn't he?
Yeah, he's yep. mayor of Kiev,
yep.
The capital
yep.
city of Ukraine.
Yep, but you got no fighters today. Who are the fighters today? I can't.
I don't. You're right. I don't follow them outside of Leonard Lewis in the last one.
Lewis Fury would have been like Lewis versus Primo Canera.
Oh man,
a lot of the guys
that
would have
been nice.
Fighters.
Me.
Oh.
Like Lewis Primo
Canera. Oh,
I think
everybody forgot
he
about
been a
him.
Setup for
yeah.
Joe Lewis and
guys,
his prime.
Oh,
guys,
boy.
A lot of the fighters that were, great strikers like Marciano, like Tyson, like guys like that, you know where they're going? They're going to MMA. UFC.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know. I don't think great fighters are going to the MMA. I think the MMA.
I didn't say great fighters. I said great strikers.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Yeah, but look, even a fighter that was starting to get over the hill, if he studies his fighter and he's cagey and sticks to his battle plan, look what Max Mayling did to Joe Lewis in the first fight. Now, Smalley was beginning to get over the hill. He wasn't quite there yet, but he was on the upslope of going over the hill. And nobody really understands this Joe Lewis, but he sat down and watched all the movies of Joe Lewis. And, you know, whenever Joe was about to throw his right hook, he dropped his shoulder. So that Max Mayling, all he did was wait for that opportunity.
He predicted
he's going to get him, and that's exactly what did. He got him.
But I don't give Schmeling that kind of credit because Joe Lewis did take him lightly.
Yeah, but he was in his prime. Joe Lewis was in his he was at his peak when Schmeling defeated him.
But at the same time, did he train for Schmeling? Schmeling was not supposed to be opponent.
He was a European heavyweight champion. You're not going to take any champion.
The same thing with Muhammad Ali, with Wepner, and with the English champion.
Yeah, but Wepner wasn't no champion. Wepner was a journeyman fighter. He wasn't no champ. Now, Henry Cooper
Henry Cooper was
a British champ.
Was an English champ. Yeah, he was the British heavyweight champion.
And nobody's going to take a champion anywhere and seriously and not train. You just not going
to. Well, I don't know. You take a look at those fighters.
He might not have taken him as seriously as, say, I don't know, Max Baer or somebody like that. But he took it seriously enough. He trained. Maybe not as hard as he'd ever trained, but he trained. And Max Mayling trained his ass off for Joe Lewis.
Yeah.
And when he got in the ring with him, he was ready to do what he had to do to win the fight. And that's exactly what he followed his battle plan.
He did.
At one point you had people like Vitaly Klitschko and Riddick Bowe and Razor Ruddock and people like that were the bigger guys that were decent fighters, but, you know, that we just don't see a lot of – we just don't see the quality of athletes that go into boxing anymore. Like I said, the quality of athletes is now going into things like, well – like I said, UFC.
The quality athletes are going into women's sports.
Yeah. Called transgenders. Yeah.
They're the ones who wind up in the lower ranks of the male rankings, and that's where they're always going
to
be.
That's what I was about to say.
They say, if I want to be a champion, I got to go against women.
I got to be a woman. I was about to say, it's not even the quality fighters, the quality runners, the quality swimmers.
Against other men. It's just not.
I bet you Layla Ali's glad she's been long retired.
Yeah, she probably is.
Yep. So, yeah, that's the case. These guys, I mean, these people, I mean, I guarantee you, I'd give you the fact that a lot of these, you know, the boxing has, at one point, boxing was on TV. Boxing was on
Fox
the Wild World
Gillette,
Sports. You know?
I remember. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, boxing was on the Wild World Sports.
The Gillette series of boxing.
Yep.
Weekend. It was like Monday Night Football.
Right, and that's the thing. Nowadays, that type of stuff is reserved for, you see, like I said, MMA. You'll see MMA on, like, you know, the sports on ESPN or whatever, you know, that type of stuff.
But it's,
you know?
It took a while, though, for the UFC to actually catch hold for the 93 when what's his name? It's the major family of jiu-jitsu. What's the major name?
Gracie.
Gracie's right.
Gracie.
Royce Gracie when he went in there and he kicked ass and everybody, and then it took a while after that for the MMA to actually catch hold. And I'm glad that it did. But today, when you talk about it, even with the MMA or boxing, none of these people have any sparkle. There's no star quality anymore.
Yeah. No personality.
Yeah. And that's a shame,
no
too.
No style.
Well,
I mean,
got people after a certain amount of time, when you got people like, what's her name, Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey.
That are going in the WWE. And retiring, you know.
What about Conor McGregor, the Irish guy, McGregor?
He made his money off of Mayweather.
Well, that too, but I hear McGregor is going to go run for office, and I believe he's Irish.
He's Irish. He's from Ireland.
I think he's going to go run for office in Ireland.
If you come from a different country, you come over here and you do well in America, you almost automatically can go back to your country and get some kind of huge political position. The Hands of Stone, they would have wanted him to have been mayor of governor of Panama.
Mm-hmm.
No, was a president of Panama. He could have been either the mayor or the head of Panama. He was that popular. But he earned it, though. I mean, he knocked out everybody. And you talk about an underrated fighter. What about the lightweight that Durant fought? That guy had a 52-0 record, something like 48 knockouts. And then Durant took care of him, and the weight differential was only like about 6 pounds, I think. I think Durant was a bantamweight, and the other guy was a lightweight, and then Durant moved up. But it was
And then a lot of the great boxers, if you want to call them that, are in the light heavyweight, flyweight, bantamweight, that type of thing. Like De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah.
You know? When you're not getting the quality in the heavyweights, you know, that you're going to get, that you're used to when you had, you know, Ken Norton and Muhammad Ali and George Foreman and Mike Tyson and Trevor Burbick and all these guys that from the 60s to the 80s, to the late 80s, you know, were there. Mm-hmm. You know, they were all heavyweights.
Well, that's what makes the boxing interesting. See, in the lighter divisions, they have the better fighters. If you wanted to see skill and you wanted to see flash and if you wanted to see quickness, then you can see bantamweight, lightweight, et cetera. And you saw really great fighters. But the heavyweights division, and not even the cruiserweight, not light heavyweight, but the heavyweight division made boxing stand out. Without the heavyweight division, boxing would have been another sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the heavyweights, back when they went during the era you speak of, they also had skills. I mean,
they
might not have been as quick as the lighter classes, but they were very skilled fighters, and you could see it most, at least the top heavyweights, all of them were.
Of course, yeah. And the beginning, and the first of the modern boxers was who was it that beat Dempsey? Oh, God. The guy that actually became a congressman, he had a nice lift. Crockett. Come on. You know.
What?
Yeah.
What's the guy's name? He just kept Dempsey away.
They grew up in the World War II era. You know, you had to fight your way to get where you were. You know, there was no entertainment back then. You know, I mean, you had to really know what really train. I mean, there was no joke. I mean, and then you had the mafia corrupt in it too. You know.
Now you know
how
Joe
Biden
feels.
Oh yeah. If you want to just get insight into that, there was a movie, Requiem for a Heavyweight with Anthony Quinn. It even had a big cameo with Muhammad Ali at the very beginning of it. He's knocking out Anthony Quinn because Anthony Quinn is on a down leg of the twilight of his career. He was once a real serious contender, but he got, you know, he didn't get managed right and everything else, and now he's just kind of a palooka. In the beginning of the fight, Muhammad Ali is knocking him out, and he gets – it's a great movie. You got Jackie Gleason in it, Anthony Quinn.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's a great fucking movie, but it goes into all that mob shit and throwing a fight and all that stuff.
And you talk about Twilight. Here's a little trivia. Twilight. It was the screenplay was written by Rod Serling.
Yeah, he wrote Requiem for a Heavyweight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what an interesting guy.
Do people get the Twilight reference? You know, Twilight Zone, Rod Serling, Twilight.
Man, he was a great writer. He was an interesting man, Rod Serling. He really was.
Oh yeah.
He was a pilot in World War II. He jumped into Regidor, if I'm not mistaken. He saw quite a bit of combat.
I didn't know that.
And he was haunted by it, and a lot of his themes on Twilight Zone are reminiscent of his time in the service and the things he saw.
And here's the thing about Muhammad Ali. He fought, at one point, he fought, what was the guy's name, the wrestler, you know?
Aoki, the Japanese wrestler.
Antonio Inoki.
Yeah.
Antonio Inoki was known for throwing. He was sort of an MMA guy before there was MMA.
Kicks.
He was known for being one a striker, but for throwing kicks. So if he wanted to throw a kick in that match, he had to get down on his ass and throw the kick because he didn't want to deal with having to be basically what Inoki was kind of a kickboxer, you know.
Well. He was a Japanese wrestler for sure, Mikey. The thing was is that, he didn't want to get hit by somebody as smooth and as fluid as Muhammad Ali. But after the fight, Muhammad Ali, when he fought Frazier, he said that was the closest thing he had ever come to death. When he fought Inoki, he said that fight with Inoki was the roughest fight he ever was in. You should have seen his leg after the fight. His whole leg was taped up. Inoki beat the shit out of him with those leg kicks.
He sure did, man. He caught him leg up. But Ali was a tough guy, man. I mean, they might have made jokes about him being pretty and all that, but he was a genuinely tough fighter. He could take it.
His jaw was underrated. As I was saying before, when he got his jaw broken by Norton, he finished the whole fight with a broken jaw.
His whole fight. And if it hadn't been broken, he might have beaten Norton. I mean, it had to impede him quite a bit.
It was
a genuine article, no doubt about it. And I don't think any comeback story, though, is greater than George Foreman's. 10 years off from boxing, 320 goddamn pounds, and he comes back at 46 to become champion of the world. Incredible story.
And I think he said, either he or Holmes, I think it was Foreman who said that Cooney had the hardest punch he ever felt.
Yep.
Was it he or was it Holmes?
No, I think Foreman said Liston hit him harder than anybody else did.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
That was inspiring.
That might have been Holmes then that said that about Cooney.
Yeah, that might have been him. But he said that, Liston, man, Liston was one strong.
Oh, Liston was.
Look at a lot of the feats of strength they witnessed Liston doing, I mean, they were legendary. He'd pick up a wheelbarrow that maybe had 500-600 pounds of rocks with it and go up a hill.
And Liston can knock you out.
Oh,
yeah.
Son of a bitch.
He could knock you out with a jab if you weren't prepared, you know. And what he did to poor Patterson.
Floyd
oh, Jesus Christ. Oh,
Floyd
man.
Floyd Patterson, man, was horrific.
Oh, God. He felt sorry for poor Floyd. God.
But I tell you, though, if you want to see a really good fight on YouTube, you ought to catch the Cleveland Williams Sonny Liston fight. And that was when Williams was in his prime, before he got shot by the cop. Because Muhammad Ali did a perfect match against what Williams was. I mean, it was probably his most perfect exhibition of his boxing skill of any fight he was ever in, that fight he had with Cleveland. But Cleveland Williams was not the same man who had fought Sonny Liston, even though he was still a good fighter. Because, like I said, they took out some several feet of his small intestine when he got hit with a 357 Magnum in the stomach.
Yeah.
But still, if you want to see the fight with a Liston and Cleveland Williams, man, that is one hell of a fight. It's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And Liston was a great fighter, but he had his hands full with Cleveland Williams.
Yeah.
Big cat.
Yeah, that era was. I mean, when you go from the 20s, when you had Jack Johnson, who was one hell of a guy. Inside, he had great wherewithal to withstand what was going on with him at that time, and he had. You talk about a guy with a sense of humor. One time he was driving in his car, and a Southern sheriff stops him and says, "You know you were speeding, boy, don't you?" And he says, okay. And the guy says, well, that's a $50 fine. No, he goes, $25. Let's say $50 fine, boy. So Jack Johnson says, here's $100. And the sheriff goes, $100? I said $50. Boy, what's this for? And and Johnson goes, well, I'm going to be speeding on the way back. Okay, so nobody laughed. All right.
Yeah. Now, you know, that's the thing. These boxing, I don't want to say it's a death sport, but if they don't get an infusion of the heavyweight soon, it's kind of dying, you know.
I agree.
My thing with the boxing is, you got the skill, lower things. But again, people want to see the heavyweight. They want to see the big guys. They want to see the heavyweights.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. I mean, and see the speed. And everything. They don't give the lightweights that much credit. I mean, the people who aren't really that well versed in boxing. They just see a lot of tiny guys bouncing around. But they don't know, you know, you've got to be, I mean, look, one Swifty against another Swifty, you got to be able to, you know, to duck those blows coming at you at the speed of light. Man.
Look, Joe, I admire the lightweight skills and their boxing ability, and they are fun to watch. I always watch a good lightweight, welterweight fight, welterweight on down any chance I get because I know it's going to be a good match. But here's the thing about the heavyweights. They got the one-punch knockout capability, and that lightweight just ain't got that. They just ain't.
No.
And everybody wants to see somebody who's got the thunder in one or both hands and knock somebody the fuck out. That's what they're looking for.
That's what they're looking for, man. You're right. They're not looking for the skill of defense of being able to come back out unharmed. No, they are looking for
When you got a guy that's basically a Mike Tyson / Muhammad Ali that can do both, you know, when Tyson was young and he was basically untouchable, he had the movement skills, he still could move, he was fast, he was quick, his defense was just nobody could touch him, you know. When you got a guy like that, that's the complete package, and still has that one punch knockout power. Tyson, his combination was like a right hook and a right uppercut, and the right uppercut was the knockout punch, I think. If I'm remembering,
Tyson. You're right. I mean, he would throw a liver shot, then he would come on with the uppercut. Yeah.
Yeah, and so and you better not let him when he was 23 between 23 and 30. You better not let him get inside on you. You're dead if he got inside on you. You know.
But that's still a pure example of how a boxer can take another opponent very lightly and have a fight an underdog who was something like you know like Douglas, who was at minimum 12-1, and Bookie didn't even want to take bets, and then bang, look what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. And basically, from what I understand about that whole situation, Buster Douglas learned to fight a different way. I think he learned to fight lefty, and he gave what's his name problems for a while in that fight. And then when he switched back fighting righty, then there you go. You know.
Well, it wasn't just.
Hey
his
guys,
skill.
I'm going to pause for just a moment here, if you don't mind. There is 4 minutes, 45 seconds left of the live broadcast. So if anybody is out there listening and wants to continue to listen as we go into the bonus hour, please call in within the next 4.5 minutes, 646-478-5284. All righty, just wanted to break in and mention that, and please continue.
Well, it's time for me to go anyway. So
yeah.
I'm going to bid you guys.
Hey, what's
to
up
do.
With that guy the other night, man, on the radio? You guys, that weirdo guy that's on that show or whatever. What's up with that guy? Is he nuts or something? I mean, what's the purpose of his show? What's he talk about? I mean, that's all he did. The whole show was, you know, that's all he did. I mean, I don't get it.
He's
telling about something. I mean, I don't know.
You mean Jim Clark?
Yeah. That guy
Jim
that
Clark,
was on there,
yeah,
you know?
he's an interesting guy. You know, he talks a lot of news and stuff, and he's kind of more for entertainment, but then usually in the second hour or so, he'll bring people on. He'll bring me on, and we'll talk a little bit of politics, and then he has quite the stories with like the women that he's dating and stuff, and yeah, he's an interesting character. I tend to enjoy it. And, you know, I just wish that he would bring more callers on, but he is kind of structured and he's kind of still getting his groove on, put it that way. So, you know, but I like him. I support him. He's overall, I think, good people. And he is kind of fun.
Now,
it takes a little while. When I first listened to him, too, I'm like, what's the deal with this dude? But he can be kind of fun once you get engaged with them and stuff.
He's another one that needs to go to Joe's relationship shows.
I've invited him. I have. I'm like, I want you to come on to the relationship show to talk about your dating horror stories.
Well, yeah.
It's like the saga of Jim Clark's dating life, you know? It's like it's a show within a show when he talks about it.
Now, my question is this. Sarge, is the case with Fannie Willis, is that basically over now?
No. It's not over yet, but there's a lot of breaking developments in it. But, no, by no means can you consider it over. I'll tell you one thing, though. You might be looking at the beginning of the end of it.
Ah, that's what I basically think too. I think if they end up removing her from the case is all but she's the one that's pushing this case, along with having the help from the the White House and shit, which has been proven that she's had meetings with the White House. So as a Big Fanny, as Benny Johnson is calling her, Big Fanny, you know, has been having meetings with the White House along with her lover boy, you know. He's been having meetings with the White House, so there's coordination in this case. So, I mean, and if she gets pulled, ends up getting pulled from the job from this case, and they don't have anybody to, I guess they could appoint somebody, but I'm not so sure the people in Georgia would want that, you know?
Yep.
Well, look, I think the very likely possibility is she might be forced to be recused from this case. The judge probably would dismiss it without prejudice, which I would certainly hope he would dismiss it with prejudice. That might be too much to hope for. But if the judge dismisses it without prejudice, then that would leave Fulton County with the option to assign a new prosecutor and start again all over from scratch, getting a new grand jury indictment and everything else. And that is unlikely given the tremendous amount of money it's going to cost.
Right, and basically, let's just game plan this thing out, Solmer. If, let's just say, for the sake of argument, okay, she recuses herself, they get a new thing, and they, it's a process, right? They get a new, she recuses herself, they get a new guy, they get a new prosecutor, they have to get a new grand jury, right? Okay? That takes time. By the time the trial actually does take place, if it takes place at all, Trump probably is going to be back in office, right?
Look, I got news for you. They have the court docket has removed the Trump case from its listing of courts. That means there is no way that case is going to be heard before the election. Right now, they're not even giving a reason why Trump's federal case, Jack Smith's case, has been removed from the docket. They're not even giving an explanation, but they have removed
it. That's right. That's right. And if that case is removed, then the case in Fort Pierce, Florida, the documents case that has already been pushed back. The Judge Cannon may very well come back later and say, "Hey, I'm dismissing this case with prejudice, you know, or whatever, you know." So that could happen too. So everything they're doing is falling apart on them, you know. Everything that includes, you know. We see what E. Jean Carroll is doing, right? She's going on all these business, all these talk shows, MSNBC, CNN, and all that stuff, and saying all kinds of crazy, weird ass shit. I mean, she's proving what Trump said about her, that she's a nut job, right? By going and doing these interviews, right? So, and then. There's questions about the judge in that case and all that stuff and not letting Trump actually defend himself by putting facts into the case that should have been there in the first place, you know. And so that case, probably when Trump goes to appeal that case, and he will appeal that case, she's never going to see any of that money, I don't think. You know, not a dime of it. And even if she did, how much of it would she see anyway, because she's got to pay the goddamn lawyers, you know? So, and she's got to pay Reid Hoffman, who's behind that case, you know? So that case is imploding. The other case, the Stormy Daniels case, has already imploded. In fact, she's had to pay, Stormy Daniels had to pay Trump for that, you know, for her case. And we know that he's going to appeal the Mar-a-Lago case in New York. So, and that case is going to, they're not going to get that $200+ million that they want out of that case either. They're, in those cases, they're trying to bankrupt them. You know, there's no doubt that those three cases of them is part of the whole thing with the election interference, right? There's no doubt there. You know, there's no doubt. But they also, the other side of the thing is they're trying to bankrupt him. They're trying to bankrupt Trump.
How much money has Trump got? How much is Trump worth?
He said, well, I think he says he's worth like $10 billion or something like that. But what they're essentially trying to do in New York is they're trying to take away his businesses. That's what they're trying to do with him. In New York, you
take away his business.
Yeah, that's what they're. Well, I'm not saying they're gonna be successful. I'm not saying they're gonna be successful.
The problem with Trump is he's got family, and they're draining his pockets too. You know, so you know that Trump empire, all that's a drain. You know what I mean? If it was just Trump, he'd have plenty of money. $10 billion. You can't break $10 billion. How much money that is in assets and everything all across the world that he has. I mean, he doesn't have $10 billion in cash. He's probably got it in all investments and real estate and stuff.
He's got Mar-a-Lago. Badminster.
What about his criminal charges? What's going on with the criminal charges? Is this guy got to go to jail, you think, Sarge? You think they're going to convict him?
They're going to convict who? Which guy's going to go to jail?
Trump.
Not anytime soon.
If you think he'll be convicted?
The election from him, the odds would go up, but I don't think they would go up enough to make that likely. I just don't believe any judge is going to countenance sending a former president of the United States to jail on charges like these, even if he's convicted. I just don't think it's likely.
Here's the deal. I'm looking at Biden, and I'm looking at the fact that nobody likes Biden, and Biden's a fucking he's an egomaniac, right? They want him to step aside, and he doesn't want to go. He's a power-hungry egomaniac.
But hang on a second here. A president is immune from prosecution, I thought. I thought a president is protected. No matter what.
Not exactly, but he is largely immune from actions he takes in the White House that are within the scope of his presidential duties, even if a private citizen who did the same thing might be considered illegally. They have to be somewhat within the scope, though, of his official duties. He cannot say just take out an assassination contract on a former wife and then claim, I'm immune from prosecution because I'm the president. It has to be within the scope of his duties. And addressing a crowd about election fraud is within the scope of his presidential duties. It's not inciting an insurrection.
Yeah. No. And that's the thing. And this whole immunity, what's happening with Jack Smith and the reason why this guy, the judge, Judge Chutkan did what she did and took it off her calendar is because Jack Smith got greedy. He went up to the Supreme Court to litigate He in essence, he tried to bypass the appeals court to litigate the immunity, right?
Right.
That's what he did. And generally speaking, courts don't like it when you skip a step. I get what he was going after.
Courts don't like what? What did you say? I didn't hear you.
Courts don't like it when you skip a step. Okay, Jack Smith, in taking the immunity up to straight to the Supreme Court, he skipped the Court of Appeals.
Well, he can't do that. He can't do that.
That's what I'm saying.
He can do it, but it's not. It's frowned upon if you do it.
Right, it's frowned upon if you do it. And
well,
when
he got case law,
an emergency petition, but this should not qualify as an emergency under that understanding.
Right, and that's the thing. And he probably knows that if it works its way through that appeals court, the immunity thing, that even though the appeals court may be just as liberal as Chutkin is, it's not Chutkin. It's not Judge Chutkin, right? It's multiple judges, and it's probably likely that it would come out on Trump's side in that appeals court. And that's why he wanted to try and skip over the appeals court. Because not only would it probably come out to his side, but it would take forever to do it. He wanted the trial to take place today.
Can't do that.
You know? That's no. Right.
And look, there are a million motions that the judge has to consider in these cases. And it is clear as a bell these people are trying to get a result before the primaries are over, to say nothing of the election. And everybody knows, given the enormous complexity, particularly the case in Georgia and the case in the federal cases, there is no way conceivable that the judges are going to hear all these motions and consider all of them with a response to them before the election season in November comes about. It's crazy. Do you even think that's likely?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Trump loses the election. Trump loses the election, he's going to jail.
To say nothing of one involving a president of the United States who is the leading contender for the Republican nomination as president. That's just crazy.
Yeah, he's going to win, you know. He's going to win. Biden's out of there. He will win. I can assure you that.
Capable of cheating. I'm sorry. I'm not going to dismiss that. I think it is entirely possible they will figure out a way to steal it.
I don't know, man.
Biden cannot win a legitimate election. He will not win a legitimate election. I am deathly apprehensive about one that is illegal, one that there are no consequences for cheating. Nobody goes to jail when they get caught.
Yeah.
There's no consequences. Why shouldn't they try?
They don't need
every state. They only need five or six of them.
So how do you think they're going to cheat this time, Sarge?
Sarge, the problem is nobody likes him. Nobody likes Biden. We don't like him. They don't like him. But I think what's happening right now is he's got information. He's got the Biden family has blackmail information. Because he's been around 50 years, he's got blackmail information on some of these people. And where, and probably got blackmail information on what's her name, on Kamala Harris. Because if that information didn't exist, then there's no doubt in my mind that Kamala Harris, they would have had Kamala Harris invoke the 25th Amendment to get his ass out of there. And
yeah, you guys,
at one point, I also thought this, Sarge, that the impeachment of Joe Biden would have taken place, would have happened in the Senate, in the House, and then they would have sent it to the Senate, and the trial would have taken place.
That's not going to happen. None of that's going to happen.
Because, I understand none of it's going to happen now, but this is months ago, that impeachment would have taken place, and they would have told Schumer, you're having a trial because we want this guy out.
Irrelevant.
Or something like that, they're not going to have the trial. They could, the Republicans can impeach him all they want. If they don't have the trial, then there's no
We're wasting our breath. They're not that's going to happen. None of it's going to happen. We're going to go through with the election, and that's what we need to be talking about, the election, because that's what's going to happen. All that other stuff is just a waste of time.
Robert's tried to say something here a couple of times now. So,
yeah.
Robert, go ahead.
Well,
go ahead,
I'm not to break in here or anything, but I need to get going so I can get to bed because I got to be up about 3 in the morning. So it's going to be a short night for me. So you guys keep going. Lori Ann's in charge, and you guys have fun.
Oh, haul ass, Robert.
Robert.
Yeah, let the shenanigans begin.
Yeah.
But, yeah, my thing with him was them
good night,
cheating.
Robert.
Good night.
Good night. My thing with him cheating,
James.
With them cheating for him, is Biden, right? They don't like him as much as we don't like him. I don't know if they're exactly going to cheat for Biden. Now, if they somehow find a way to replace Biden, yeah, they'll cheat for the next guy. They just won't cheat for Biden. You know?
Listen, what difference? Biden's out, but Trump will win. Trump will win in November. It's over. Well, that's the way they're gearing it up. You know, let's not major happen now and then.
They will cheat for whoever Obama says to cheat for.
Obama doesn't.
Right.
Obama's not. Why do you guys keep saying Obama's in charge? Why do you guys keep saying that? He's not.
Because that's who's operating behind the scenes. That's who's really dictating to Biden what to do.
This is his third term. This is his third term. Obama's third term.
And I don't know.
And here's the deal. The people who kept saying that Big Mike is going to run, that's not going to happen either because, and this is coming from a guy who was on a presidential, was on Obama's presidential Secret Service detail. Big Mike.
Who's Big Mike?
Is Big Mike, Michelle.
Who?
Michelle Obama is an intensely private person. That's number one. Number two is, what's his name? Barack Obama is, she didn't like the fact that she had to be there in the first place as the first lady, you know, she'd much rather have stayed in Chicago, you know, that type of stuff. But third off, he's an egomaniac. He wants to be the only president in that family, Barack Obama.
I think he's irrelevant. I don't think he runs anything. The people behind the scenes are the ones that run the show. The Schwabs.
Okay,
and,
here's the deal, though, Joe. Here's the thing, Joe. Look at the people that surround Biden. How many of those guys, those people, and one of them just left. I believe John Kerry just left. How many of those people were in one of the two administrations for Obama?
I don't know.
John Kerry was, Buttigieg was,
all them people are puppets. They don't run nothing. They can't call the shots.
And then of course what's her name is tied. Kamala Harris is tied to the Obamas. You know, she's tied to the Obamas. But yeah, I just don't.
Where's the Bush family today?
They're all tied to Hillary Clinton too. I think, you know, Hillary Clinton is definitely a big player of who's operating behind the scenes, the Clinton Foundation and stuff like that. So. And yeah, she's one of they're all part of the New World Order bullshit. They're all part of Klaus Schwab's minions. And in order to avoid a foreign influence kind of scandal, if Biden is actually, you know, influenced by Obama, i.e. the Clintons, then there's no technical direct foreign influence conflict.
But again, I'll say it again, guys. Again, this is what got Hunter in trouble was that, yeah, he's a foreign agent. You're allowed to be a foreign agent, but he didn't register under the FARA Act, Foreign Agent Registration Act, right? So he's illegal. It's illegal for him to be doing what he's doing because he's not registered under that act.
Well, that and all of the things that he did to hide the money to avoid paying legitimate income taxes on it. That is foreign derived income that actually is subject to the income tax. And so they did that to avoid it. And they're showing that these payments, you know, they spread them out. They went through multiple banks, multiple shell accounts, offshore accounts, and then spread them out into members of the Biden family in order to hide that money and avoid paying taxes on it. So it's tax evasion and money laundering to boot.
Yep. And where does that money go to? 10% goes to the big guy. And everybody knows who the big guy is.
And I'm pretty sure, remember Sam Bankman-Fried? You know, Sam Bankman-Fried and that whole, you know, the whole trial and being found guilty and all that shit. A lot of this stuff came out in that trial, too. That, you know, he was a part of this money laundering scam that was going back to Democrats. And I want to see the money trail that ties the Sam Bankman-Fried scandal and fraud directly to the Bidens. I know damn well, you know, like if Sam Bankman-Fried and his operation was not involved in this, I would be very surprised, because all of that money was going through very similar hands, going from Ukraine, China, you name it, going through, you know, these quote unquote charitable organizations. And then going back to the Democrat Party and to Democrat candidates as donations. And so that's what I would like to see happen is evidence being made public on the direct connection between the Bidens and the Sam Bankman-Fried scandal and fraud.
Yep. All these scandals are not Biden scandals. Well, they are, but they're not so much Biden scandals as they are Obama scandals. They're not trying to protect Biden. They're trying to protect Obama, because a lot of this stuff started within the Obama administration.
Oh, yeah, because heaven forbid that this stuff gets tied to Obama, our first black president, you know, having his good name and reputation destroyed. You know what I mean? Of course that he's protected. As the first black president, they will pull a fucking Moses to protect him. You know what I mean?
They will split
the Red Seas in order to shield Obama.
Yeah, they will cut off their right arm to protect Obama. You know, that is what that is.
Obama's a man.
Yep.
They never, you know, and here's the deal. Think about this. You know, these are the same people that all they play, they play this identity politics. Oh, we got the first, we could have the first female president. We could have the first black, we had the first black president. We had, you know, all this stuff, the first Hispanic president, all this stuff, you know, that they all the time do. And it's like what's his name all the time says with these guys. He calls it the Dipsy, Bongino calls it the Dipsy Flipperoo. They accuse you of the stuff that they are doing. What did they accuse Trump of doing? Taking money from foreign entities, right? What are they doing?
I'm all stuffing envelopes.
Yeah, and I'm
right
just
now,
seeing
but...
this article right now. Speaking of which, just the news, Biden's new climate envoy had a close relationship with CCP Chinese United Front Influence Group. The Biden administration continues to emphasize climate cooperation with China, even as the relationship grows more confrontational. The new climate envoy has a history of favorable negotiations with China and close relationships with a Chinese influence group with longstanding connections to the Chinese Communist Party. So here we go. Talk about foreign influence and money. The White House recently appointed John Podesta as climate envoy following the exit of John Kerry from the administration, yet Podesta's previous work with a Chinese United Front-linked organization on climate change raises concerns about his eligibility to negotiate with China, the world's biggest emitter of greenhouse gases. When the article goes on, I'll put it in the chat, but here we go. You know, we're talking about foreign influence. We're talking about all this money changing hands. And now it's all the climate agenda. It's like, you know, that's the next way for our government to bankrupt us is these, you know, what is it, like $1.2 trillion or something that, you know, Biden is pushing for all this environmental climate change shit. And meanwhile, you know, some of this money is going to China. It's like we're going to pay China to supposedly help clean up their emissions. Like, what? You know? That's what's been going on. But what's really been going on is in order for our emissions and our environmental report card to look better, we've basically offshored it to China, you know, and other countries so that we look better. You know, and so we have China and other countries that are doing the worst environmental shit for us, you know, but so long as it's not on our shores, then it's all good and fine and dandy because then our report card looks good. But look at how much of our money is going basically to pay these countries off to do it for us. You know, it's another money laundering scheme on the taxpayer dime. Who's doing a Biden and whispering?
No, I'm trying to find stuff. Anyway, you're right. At least I'm not sniffing hair. You know.
There, I put the link in the chat on that article that I just mentioned, that I just saw pop up. I mean, more and more shit is coming out. And you can read through it.
About,
it's kind of a large article, but you start seeing more and more who these players are.
You know, I've said this before, you know, about the corruption. They like the corruption. They just don't like it that it's in our faces. You know, that's what Biden has done. He put the corruption in the American people's faces, right? Now, will he really have something done to him? No, no, that's not the point. The point is we know how corrupt this guy is. We can see how corrupt this guy is, and they don't like the fact that we can see how corrupt this guy is and probably put one and one together that equals two and say, if he's corrupt, how corrupt are the rest of them?
What's wrong with you? You didn't pay attention in the new math class? One and one is two?
Yeah, I failed math class three or four times. I had to go to summer school for math three or four times. So, you know, go figure, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but your math had me confused. I went to new math school, you know.
So 1 + 1 equals square, right?
1 + 1 can equal anything you want it to if you're black or Hispanic.
So wait, if that's the case, then A plus B doesn't equal C either.
No, it means whatever you want it to mean.
Yeah. Unless you're Biden when, you know, 60 billion going to Ukraine equals 1 billion coming back for you, or 6 billion coming back for you, or whatever the fuck it would be. You know, it only 1 + 1 only equals two when it comes to corruption. You know, it's like I've always said: these governments, be it state, local, state or federal, if they want to find the money for something, they'll go out there and find the money for it. And they don't mind, they don't care how they find the money. They got to come and shake you down and reach into your couch and get the little change out of your couch, they'll do that.
Oh, yeah. And then we got to, you know, and I think we're all forgetting about Ukraine. Like, you know, that's the distraction, all this stuff in the Middle East. It's distracting from Ukraine. And I can't remember if I mentioned this. It might have been on a different show, but I saw the article on January 28th. Ukraine says it uncovered a $40 million scheme to embezzle money meant for weapons. So we're giving Ukraine money for weapons in this war. And here's what it's going toward. A high-ranking Ukrainian defense ministry officials conspired with employees of a Ukrainian arms supplier in a scheme to embezzle nearly $40 million meant to purchase 100,000 mortar shells for the country to use in its war against Russia, according to the Ukraine Security Service known as the SBU. The plot began in August 2022. When officials signed a contract with the supplier, Lviv Arsenal, for nearly 1.5 billion hryvnias, whatever the currency is in Ukraine, or more than $39.6 million for mortar shells. And after being paid, the supplier was supposed to transfer part of the funds to a foreign company that was supposed to deliver 100,000 mortar rounds to Ukraine. However, the supplier did not send a single artillery shell to our country and took the received funds into the shadows, the SBU said. As translated, most of that money was sent to accounts in the Balkans instead. And the article goes on. I can put that in the chat as well. So this is what our money is going towards. And then this is why, like, you see the Democrats, they don't want accountability for any of this money. And the Republicans are the ones that were, you know, the Republicans and the conservatives are the bad guys for wanting to have accountability, you know, to trace where this money is going. And because of it's totally ripe for fraud if there is no accountability and no transparency in it. And all of these, you know, Biden, Democrat, you know, Ukraine, rah, 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 we must support them no matter what. People don't, you know, this is what happens, you know. And if you think about it too, like, this is August 2022 that this started, you know. And so that's, you know, $40 million of our money in just this one instance that is fraudulent. We're giving money to Ukraine in order for shit like this to happen. Absolute insanity. Why are we even fucking still doing it? Why, you know, why did we even fund the shit to begin with if there was not going to be any transparency or accountability at all? And the same goes with any money that we give. Number one, we shouldn't be giving foreign countries money anyway. But when we do, it absolutely should be like, hey, well, you know, we're going to give you this, you know, these several billion dollars, but you're going to have to keep track of where that money goes and let us know, you know. We should be able to audit you to make sure that it's going for what it's intended to go for instead of this rampant fraud. Just like the COVID money, you know, COVID money too. It's been, you know, I'm pretty sure at least 70% of all of those COVID relief funds have been used in fraud. You know, I would be very surprised if there was any more than 25% that was actually legitimately used for what it was intended for. And the same goes for all this money going to the Ukraine. The same goes for all this money going to Israel, everywhere. You know, I would bet that only 25% of it at the very most actually goes for what it's intended to go for. And the rest is fucking fraud. And we're the ones suffering for it. Well, that shut everybody up, didn't it?
Yeah, I was out of the room, so I don't know.
Hey, boy,
yeah.
Now's a good time for you to chime in, or Joe Gibson. Pianki dropped a while ago.
Oh, wow.
So I know he's not.
And
I guess since I'm talking now, Cinnamon and Donnie, I know that you've been just sitting back listening on the switchboard for a while, but before I forget to do so, I'm going to unmute you on my end so that way you can chime in since there is only a little over 20 minutes left of the bonus hour and the switchboard will go down. So before I forget, I'm going to unmute you. Stay muted on your end, but chime in whenever you feel free to chime in. All right. And Boyd, we still have you, don't we? Boyd fall asleep.
Not quite.
Yeah, Boyd still, but yeah.
I'm just sitting here listening to all this bullshit.
Hey, Boyd. So I know that it looks like Anchorage, Alaska, and Alaska is really suffering from global warming right now. Like global warming is like a serious problem up there when you have record cold temperatures.
Well, it's cool. It's not as warm as it used
cool.
to be. You know, but... You know, then again, you know, we live in Alaska, and Alaska, you know, she does what she wants to do when she wants to fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there ain't nothing you're going to do about it.
Does it ever get warm up there? Does it ever get warm up there? Does it ever get up to the 90s?
Yeah, it does in the Fairbanks.
Really? Well.
Yeah, I've seen it 70 below and... Fairbanks, and 90 above, all in a 12-month period.
Wow. Interesting. And look at this asshole. This is what this asshole writes. Look at this crap I got to put up with. He says, I took the time to fill out my Ballotopia candidate connection survey to share my vision and goals. You'll be able to see the responses on my profile soon. Somebody responds to me. This is what he says. He says, does it include rounding up Jews and putting them in camps, asking for a friend? What asshole, huh?
I saw that. Yeah, I kind of scoured your Twitter.
Yeah.
And I saw that, yeah. Yeah, you know, like that's what you're gonna do. Yeah, you get an office, Bill Gibson.
Yeah. my little old me. I'm gonna round up all the entire race of Jews and put them in camps.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. Come on.
You got it.
Come on.
You got it. And you're gonna round up blacks. And you're gonna round up all Democrats. You're gonna round up all the gays, and you're gonna send them to the gas chamber, man.
Gas them all.
Yeah,
you know,
come on.
I mean, ridiculous.
Come on, man.
Hell, I might even round myself up.
Send yourself to the concentration camps.
Hell, why live?
Why live?
I stand in solidarity with those I prosecuted.
Hell, there won't be anybody left on Earth. I might as well go too, right?
Yeah, may as well include libertarians in there. You know, we're not authoritarian enough, so they better round up all the libertarians too.
Yeah, give them the old big title.
See, I asked him a key question when they were saying that. I said, do you have any testimony or any actual visual evidence of me ever attending a Nazi rally? Or speaking at a Nazi, they don't. See, how could you say something without proof like that, you know? Just because I was on a podcast show? Unreal.
Yeah, and just because they endorsed you doesn't mean that it was reciprocal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the National Socialist Party, you know, white nationalists, you know, endorsed you. Well,
so
what? You know, did you endorse them? Did you say, thank you very much for your endorsement. I regard your organization highly. Did you ever say that?
Think about this. Remember when David Duke came out and said nice things about Trump and what the media and fuckers said about him? Oh, he's a Nazi now. He hates this, that, and the other, and all that stuff, and which is further from the truth. David Duke is a blight on my beloved Louisiana.
Yeah.
You should tell him. I'm gonna round them all up. I'm gonna round all the blacks up. And I'm going to, you know, round up all the whites. I'm going to put you all in the same fucking cage and see who comes out.
Oh, and don't forget all the illegals. You're not going to deport the illegals. You'll put them all in the same cage.
Oh, hell no. No. I'm going to. All the illegals are going to buy tickets to come see the fight.
Yeah. You're going to be given the voucher.
Yep. You got all our money anyway.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I tell you what.
Did you see that New York? New York now, New York City is now giving all of these illegal migrants prepaid credit cards.
Of course they are.
Here you go.
Here's
a prepaid credit card.
Here's what happened.
Isn't that fucking nice? Can I get one of those, please?
Yeah. Here's what's happening with that, though, Laurier. And this is coming from this guy that I know in Florida that does a radio show out of Florida. And he's, He talked about this today on both his radio show and his podcast he does on YouTube. What these guys are doing is they're doing all their criminal acts in states that have no bail, that will turn around and just let you go, and then they're living legal lives in states like Florida. Well, as legal as an illegal can be in states like Florida. They're not robbing people. They're basically, other than breaking the, you know, the laws coming in, you know, they're not, you know, robbing people, killing people and all that stuff. So they're not living in New York. They're living in places like Florida, but they're going and doing the criminal acts in places like Chicago, L.A., New York, you know, places like that. Now, so that's what's happening with these people, and that's why you've seen the footage of a couple of these guys coming out of one of the precincts in New York City, flipping everybody off. Lorianne?
Yeah. I haven't really seen the videos of it, but I believe it.
I seen it. Yeah. Yeah, they did it. And they didn't.
And everybody
didn't really care whether or not you saw his face.
No, he didn't care. None of them did.
Nope. Did not care. Not a one fucking bit.
Walked right past everybody smiling.
Mm-hmm.
You know what pisses me off even more? That was on New York City streets, and not one person came to the aid of those two police officers. Nobody.
Nope.
That's what gets me.
Yeah, I saw that story, too. That's crazy.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but you know what? If somebody would have come to the aid of those cops,
they'd still be in jail.
The guys who came to give aid would still be in jail.
Yeah, you're right. I believe you're right. That's probably why nobody.
You assaulted an illegal. Go to the slammer, mm-hmm. even though you were a defending cop. That's the mentality in New York right now.
There's a tape I seen about the same time I seen the one in New York. It's in England. It shows a female cop, illegals, humping her. I mean, humping her. I'm serious. Like he's screwing her right on the street, and he's looking at the camera laughing. And he walks
mm-hmm.
away. Because they can't touch these damn fools. They can't. They lose their job. They go to prison. If they do their job.
Isn't it sickening? It's absolutely
mm-hmm.
sickening.
It is.
And what if you're the rape victim? You know? How dare you actually bring charges against an illegal for raping you? You know what I mean?
What happened since, what was it? 3, 4, 5 years ago, I think this happened before the bioweapon got released, but there was a little girl that was killed by an illegal in San Francisco, and the little girl got away with it, right? And they tried to pass a law against it, and the law failed to get passed. So basically, San Francisco being the damn sanctuary city, which is, again, illegal. It's against the law. These sanctuary cities are against the federal law, but they do them anyway. They get what they pay for. New York City is another sanctuary city. You get what Chicago's the same way. You get what you pay for. You know? You're paying for these politicians to pass these laws, and then you complain after the law gets passed.
Yeah, that's what they try to bury all the time, too. It's like we have so many distractions that we don't even know that these laws get passed until after the fact. And then we see the – and then, you know, it's a hell of a lot harder to repeal a law than it is to stop it from the beginning. And that's what they bank on, you know.
Well, everybody,
focus on Taylor Swift. Everybody, Taylor Swift, Taylor Swift, you know, Taylor Swift everywhere and every fucking feed. And meanwhile, you know, nobody notices.
Well, you know, that's the deal. Focus on this. And it goes, these laws that get passed, it goes back to, and Sarge has mentioned this before. Now, I don't know if Sarge is around anymore, but is on the line with us anymore, but he's mentioned about Tower and Kevin. The sheer amount of these laws that get passed, I mean, you may have one here and one there and one there and one there, and, you know, by the time you're gearing up to face something, to try to go against one of these laws, 10 or 15 more passed, right? Cloward and Kevin overwhelmed the system, you know?
Exactly. And I'm showing Sarge is still on. Let's see, before we go into No Man's Land, we got about 8.5 minutes or so before No Man's Land. Who I'm showing we still have on is Joe Gibson, you, Mike, Boyd, Sarge, myself, Donnie, and Cinnamon. So that's who we got on the line right now.
Hi, Cinnamon.
Oh,
yeah,
Cinnamon's
here. Been quiet.
Oh, I was
probably
mute. I couldn't
rearranging
mind the, thing
the kitchen and keeping
unmute.
Herself muted.
Yep.
I was.
Oops, sorry.
Hello.
What did you say, Cinnamon? We were both talking at the same time. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was trying. I couldn't find the window to get myself off on mute on my phone. I wasn't ignoring it. But yes, I'm trying not to cause noise.
Yeah.
That'll be the first time.
But I kind of miss the rattle, rattle, thunder, clatter, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you do. You'll probably hear it tomorrow night and again on Sunday. We'll see how much you like it then.
I don't know if you know the reference to that, but did you ever remember that? I know that in the Midwest, especially Minnesota, there is a company called Midas that worked on, like, mufflers. Yeah. And so that was their commercial jingle was rattle, rattle, thunder, clatter, boom, boom, boom. Don't worry, call the Midas man. That's where I get that phrase from.
Really?
And then it also goes to my mom because I started applying it to my mom because I remember when I was growing up, you know, my room was down in the basement just underneath the kitchen. And in the morning, like on weekends, I would wake up to my mom rattling all the pans in the cupboards. It would wake me up coming from upstairs. And I'd joke with her like, Mom, it's Saturday morning, 8 o'clock in the fucking morning. I don't need the rattle, rattle, thunder, clatter, boom, boom, boom.
No.
My head.
That wouldn't happen in my house because I was always up because I didn't want to miss Saturday mornings, if you get my drift.
Yep.
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning cartoons with Elmer and Bugs.
The good cartoon.
There used to be a song about that, and I can't remember the name of the song, but my mom used to sing that.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully you don't remember it now. We don't need
you.
No,
I don't remember it now.
Lorianne was bad enough. I mean, you chime in. I'm hanging up.
Ha.
I didn't hang.
Oh, no. Donnie can't handle the estrogen talking in the room.
Yeah, back when Lincoln were coming up, that was a big effing deal. Saturday mornings was a big effing deal, you know. Wake up, get your nice bowl of sugary cereal. Get your nice bowl of sugary cereal, you know. Sit down in front of the TV and watch whatever, you know. Watch Bugs Bunny or whatever, fuck, you know.
What was the chicken, the rooster and the...
Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh my God, yes. I still enjoy seeing some of those old cartoons. I bought I think there's 150 cartoons on this DVD, and it's got all the old ones back in the day, and something called Lulu, I don't know, things I never heard of, but quite a few that I have, and they were funny, and they weren't, you know, they're funny violent. They weren't, you know, you weren't pulling out a handgun and blowing somebody's head off in a store or anything like the guy now. It was just funny.
Yeah.
We bought that CD, DVD for the birds because parrots like things that three-year-olds would like. So they like watching, like, sports because everybody cheers and gets excited. They like cartoons for the same reason.
That's right. I forgot about that. That was
the
JD.
And the cartoons were, I think, from the 40s all the way on up.
Yeah.
Actually,
a little bit of each.
From the early 50s, because not a lot of people had, you might say cartoons from the 40s because they were at the beginning of movies in the movie theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I'm talking about early 50s. From the early 50s to, I'm going to say, about 2012, a period of about 50 years, you know?
Yeah, I remember Saturday mornings. We would start off on one channel, and then something stupid would come on, and we'd switch over to the next channel, and we only had three choices to begin with.
Yeah.
And by the time Mom and Dad got up, you were in a sugar coma.
Yeah, you were. You either had CBS, ABC, or NBC. That's it. That's all you had. You know?
And if you're lucky, you could get UHF, you know, like a local UHF station. Sometimes you could get Channel 50 in Detroit, but not all the time.
Right.
UHF was a static channel.
We had, you know, we get things, you know, now this is in the early to mid-80s, we get things like, you know, in the afternoons they started putting stuff on in the afternoons like, you know, Scooby-Doo and things of that nature. And then on the morning, Saturday mornings, they'd have, you know, Transformers and all that, G.I. Joe, but those things were basically toy commercials. That's what those things were. People liked them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little bit older than you are. So the toy commercials didn't come out until, like, I'm trying to think of it was the 80s. It was an early, it was before Transformers, but it was when five different people would join together to make one big robot. Ship anyway. Yeah, I can't even remember what it was called. Yeah,
that was
Voltron. That's what it was.
Or what?
That's what it was.
What?
Voltron.
The universe.
Yeah. Oh, oh God, yes.
They were all lying.
I bought the kids stuff. Yeah, I bought that for the kids for Christmas or something. I remember that. Voltron. Boy, that was a big hot toy.
That was a hot toy. I mean, originally
something
of
the universe. Something in
the
universe.
Originally, G.I. Joe was back there in the 60s and the 70s. But then they came out, then they did the cartoon, and then they started to have the little 3 1/4 or 3 1/2 or whatever it was, inch figures. The original G.I. Joe was these big, huge 6-7 inch tall figures, you know?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They shrink them down, and then, well, they sell more.
No, they shrunk them down and charged 4 times more.
Yep.
And there you go.
There you go.
Yeah,
by
most
the
of
way,
the cartoons that I liked were the Scooby-Doo, of course. I liked the Warner Brothers, you know, the Bugs Bunny and all of that. Trying to think of some of the other ones.
Looney Tunes.
Yep, Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes.
Yep, Fat Albert. Fat Albert was one that made us change the channel.
What?
Because there was something else on another channel.
Debbie
does
for kids stuff. Her gym,
we know where your mind is, boy.
Where is your funny bones?
But yeah,
He-Man.
Yeah.
I remember
like
I used to like watching He-Man.
Yeah, when you call me.
And
He-Man
was the one with the Castle Grayskull is the one that Don had to look for.
Yeah. And then after that, they came up with. His sister had one called She-Ra.
Yep.
You know? But, you know, I used to, when they originally started to have the Cartoon Network and they had, you know, Josie and the Pussycats and Johnny Quest you know, things of that nature, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Hong Kong Phooey. You know?
I remember that when my kids were watching it. I'm an old man, so I remember some of those, but some of them I don't.
Yeah, Hong Kong Phooey was from the 60s. And they put, you know, when the Cartoon Network started on, they did a lot of the cartoons from the 60s.
And then late in the 70s, they even had a cartoon that was made for, maybe it was in the early 80s, I don't know, but they even made one of Godzilla.
Oh, I would have watched that if I would have known that was there. I never saw that one. That was the Saturday afternoon stuff, and Sunday afternoon was watching all the monster movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Godzilla against whatever mutant they could come up with. King Kong movies.
And then for us older kids, it was Elvira at night.
Yep.
Yeah, we had Sir Grave Ghastly in our area.
Yes, I had the ghoul.
Yeah, well, we didn't get the ghoul in because it was at night, so we didn't get.
It's on Saturday night, 11:30.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the channel wasn't as easy to get.
Channel 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how it was harder to get things in at night than it was during the day, so we couldn't get quite to 50.
Yeah, they do cut the power. True.
Yeah. That's the deal. Now, granted, we had when Fox originally came around,
we could, where we are, where we live right now, we're in the part of, we're kind of in a triangle where we can get, or whatever, where we can get, where we could have gotten, play the stations out of Baton Rouge and some of the stations out of Lafayette, Louisiana. You know, and it's like, okay, at the end of the time during, you know, at the end of the day, you know, on Saturday mornings, they would play this Cajun music, you know, called Zydeco music, or they would play either that, or they would play, before that, they would play like Solid Gold, or what's the one with Don Cornelius, Soul Train, you know, that type of stuff.
I remember Soul Train.
At the end of the time, you know, that type of stuff. And then they'd come back after that, they'd come back with the Zydeco music where we were, which is local to where, you know, Louisiana type music, you know. But yeah, but from 6 o'clock to about, I'd say 11:30 in the mornings on Saturdays, they did cartoons, you know, and that was a big deal. I made, you might not have been able to get me up to go to school, you know, to catch the bus to go to school, but I damn sure made it a point to be up for 6 a.m. on Saturday mornings. You weren't going to stop me from getting up to see these cartoons. That's just the way it was. And here's the deal. At 6 a.m. to, let's call it 11 a.m., 6 hours, if you want to add 11 to noon, which would be, 11 to noon would be, 7 to midday for the East Coast, after the cartoons and stuff went on, we were out in the neighborhood doing whatever we were going to do, you know, playing. And they would all the time tell us, see ya when the streetlights come on. You know, that's the way it worked.
Mine was be home for dinner.
And then a lot of times back then, I'd be home for dinner, but I'd go right back out again, especially if we're in the middle of daylight savings time, where I'd come back for dinner and then go back out again at, say, 6:30 and have another 2 or 3 hours of daylight, a couple hours of daylight, right?
Yeah, true.
But yeah, that's the way things were when we grew up. But people that were born later don't understand that. I mean, yeah, my sister who was born in 1979, she came in on the tail end of that. She knew what it was about. But anybody that was born, say as late as 1985. Maybe they're not going to understand. They're not going to understand the fact that how big, you know, Saturday mornings were, because, you know, by 1990, you know, you had things like Cartoon Network, you know, you had things like, Disney Channel. You had things like,
what's that other fucking channel? Anyway, that had, you know, Double Dare and things of that nature. You had those type of channels that either did it for most of the day or did it for all day. Cartoons all day. Most of the day or all day. All right? So in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in the case of Cartoon Network, when they could go in there and watch cartoons anytime they want. And now you got the internet that you, if you want to find Transformers or you want to find whatever, Scooby-Doo, you know, you can find it and watch it and do whatever. You got YouTube, you got pirate websites, you got, you know, cartoonnetwork.com, you got all kinds of places where you can find these cartoons, and you don't have to stress about watching cartoons. You can watch them anytime you want. It is what it is nowadays, you know, with that. But back then, hey, you know.
Yep. They've got, it's much easier if you're bored to figure out something to do, you know, on a screen.
And don't even get me started when you started to have like the Atari and the Sega and all that, all those things, the video games that started to come out in the late 70s or early 80s, where, yeah, you might not have had, everybody might not have had it, but at least one or two in your neighborhood would have had it, you know, so, and if you have a neighborhood of, say, 40 or 50 houses, you know, or, you know, several, 40 or 50, a large trailer park maybe, you can book it that somebody in that neighborhood would have had a video game, a Nintendo or a Sega or Atari or whatever, you know. You can book it that somebody's going to have one. At least one person's going to have one. And some people, like my cousin, one of my cousins who had 3 or 4 or 5 different gaming systems as he was growing up, you know, with multiple games in his system. So, yeah, you had other, starting in the early to mid-80s, you had other options for entertaining your kids. They didn't have to sit 6 hours in front of a TV watching cartoons. They could six hours or 8 hours in front of a TV, you know, playing a video game. And you didn't have to leave the comfort of their home. That's the way things work.
When I was growing up, Mom didn't put it upon herself to make sure we were entertained. We could watch TV for so long, and then it was pretty much go do something. So if we wanted to go up into the room, because I like to read, so sometimes I would go upstairs and read, or, you know, go out and try and find one of my friends, that kind of thing.
Well,
it was just get out from underneath my feet.
That's when you had 3 kids by the time you were 15.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have any kids. Okay, I'll back down. I thought that was funny. Apparently it wasn't.
That was cute.
Oh, cute. I want funny. That's usually what us country people do. Is we don't have nothing to do. We find the opposite sex and have fun. That's what we normally do. I'm going away again. Bye. I'll just sit here.
Poor Donnie.
Come on, Donnie. Come on back. I thought that was humorous. I just didn't laugh out loud.
Donnie has left the building. Donnie has left the building.
Yeah. Think about this. Some of those shows, some of those cartoons, some of those
TV shows that were made back then could not be made today. Not at all. You know, we've seen what they've done to the Dukes of Hazzard.